Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Aiken City Council work session this evening, August 23rd. And as you are well aware, because you're here, we were talking about one item tonight, and that's the business license. And Ms. Vaughters brought this to our attention, council's attention, some time ago. And we've been talking about it for a long time, and so all of our discussions and what's gone on has led to a meeting tonight, and we really appreciate everybody being here. It's a good group, and we'll get down into the details, and I think everyone will learn something. I know I've learned something through this process as well. And we're very pleased to have Mr. Roy Bates with us tonight. Roy, and many refer to as the Dean of Municipal Attorneys or Counselors over the years, and he was with the Municipal Association for many years, and I had the pleasure of working with him for a few brief years while he was still there. And Roy, of course, was also instrumental in developing and working with the business license ordinance for South Carolina a few years back. So we're really pleased and honored to have Roy with us tonight to help us get through this, to talk to us about some of the legal issues and those kinds of things, and to answer questions as well. So, again, thank you for being with us, and we hope that we can all leave here tonight learning something maybe that we didn't know before and understanding it a little bit better. And what council hopes to do tonight is to give our city staff some guidance as to what we want to do from here on out. And Mr. LeDuc will get into that in more detail. So without further ado, Roger, I turn it over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Tonight, again, as the mayor stated, we're going to talk about the business license. So let me give you some generalities, and then I'll ask Roy Bates to come up here and to speak in general and to answer any of the questions that council may have. The business license, we tried to go back in our history to get a little bit more of an understanding as to when the city started a business license. The best we come up with is we found a pamphlet from 1938 that showed that the business license back then was $15 base fee, and then 15 cents per thousand, starting off with other categories higher. We could have had a business license earlier than that. Even found out today that Carol Busby's dad was one of the original business license individuals back in the 30s with the city of Aiken, so that was kind of interesting. The business license has been enacted by cities and counties throughout North America for two reasons. One, it's a revenue source for the city. And the second reason, it helps control businesses. Last year, we had a business that was not doing the right thing. And because of the nuisance that we were having with that business, we withdrew the business license and the business had to close its doors. That doesn't happen very often, but it is a tool that we could sometimes use to control what happens with some of the businesses. With any business license, the classifications and the rates within those systems has to be what we state as being reasonable. You just can't arbitrarily come up with a system and charge one class of business one rate and then charge another one unduly another rate that doesn't have any fairness to it. The system that we currently are using, which the majority of the cities in South Carolina use, is called the SIC system, S-I-C. It's the standard industrial classification system. It's been used by the city since the mid-70s, and those rates have not changed since that time. So we have the same rates since the 70s and have not changed them whatsoever. Most recently, North America, Canada, United States, and Mexico joined together to come up with a more uniform system that is called the NAIC, North America Classification Industrial System. And that classification system uses more of an IRS coding, so that anytime on your IRS forms that you send in for tax purposes, you have to go ahead and put your classification designation. And it's the system that About a half a dozen communities within South Carolina have now started using. This was developed in 1997 in cooperation with those three countries. And it's a system that we are possibly going to consider going to in the future, depending on how council wants to deal with this subject. The standard industrial classification system that we're currently under, the difference here is that they have stopped putting in new classification codes a number of years ago. So computer technology, businesses that might be with telecommunications are no longer listed in the classification system, and it presents us a little bit of a problem in trying to identify what we should use. Council tonight, as they look at the issue, as the mayor said, we basically need from you direction as to what changes, if any, we want to make. And there's really probably four different areas that we could look at tonight. One, we could stay with the system that we've had since the 70s and continue with that system. That system has, between each classification and the way that the cities and the counties throughout the United States look at the classifications, is it's based on what they say the ability to pay. The lower the classification, the less they pay. The higher classification, the higher they pay. The highest classification system that we have is a class 7. That's where professionals would be in that area, attorneys, doctors, engineers, technicians with computer systems, etc. The newer system that some of these cities are adopting doesn't change the classifications that much. There might be a business that might move up or down one class or another, therefore they may raise the rates up a little bit or lower it, but there's no general major changes in it. Within the system, we had also looked at a number of other communities in South Carolina to kind of give us a general feeling where we stood. We looked at Columbia, Greenville, Newberry, Camden, Clemson, Hartsville, Union, Mount Pleasant, Myrtle Beach, Greenwood, and Anderson, and looked at some general classifications for city council, and found out, for instance, with general contractors, all 11 other cities had a higher rate, or you would have been charged a higher business license than here in Aiken. Same thing with general merchandise stores, retail stores. 10 out of the 11 had a higher rate than we did. On the opposite end of it, optical goods, 3 had higher, 6 had lower. And we're around average in most of the other rates categories. So again, from one city to the other, you'll see some rate changes, but generally we fall in the lower end, not the upper end of the status of it. Tonight, for City Council, again, we could stay with the same system we have. You could take the system that we developed in 1975 and make some basic changes. Again, the rates have not changed at all since that time. We could go ahead and go to the new North American Industrial Classification System, which we refer to as the NAIC. That, again, would move some businesses up or down slightly. It would take probably about 6 months to go ahead and take the 3,000 businesses we have. We'd have to do everything manually and to enter in a new code for them to come up with what their new rates would be. Or the fourth one, which is probably more the drastic one, would be eliminating the licensing altogether and doing away with some of the services or raising taxes or other fees in some other manner. And maybe there's something in between that you would even have. Currently, the last time we looked at it, there was a little over 3,000 businesses that had a business license with the city of Aiken. Back in the mid-90s, we did have one change that we made, and that's when we went ahead and doubled the outside city fees so that any business outside the city that was doing business inside the city, we doubled their fees. And so that's really been the only other change that we made since that time. We do have Lex Kirkland there. Why don't you raise your hand up, Lex? And he is our business license administrator. Al Cothran is here. He formerly had that position. And then Anita Lilly is here, who is our finance director. And so I think we have individuals that can answer most any question that council may have. And if you don't mind, we could have Roy Bates speak, Mr. Mayor, and kind of explain a little bit of how this model ordinance was developed and answer any other questions you may have.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, thank you for inviting me. That is on. Okay. If you'll bear with me for a moment, I think it might be well for us to refresh ourselves on exactly what a business license is in the first place, and secondly, how your system was developed and how it was envisioned to work. Once you understand the basics of this, then I think that will help you in making a decision of whether you want to stick with this or make a change. A business license fee is a tax. The Supreme Court has said very plainly it's an excise tax that's charged for the privilege of doing business in a municipality. The state law requires that it be levied based on the gross income of the business. There is no other basis which is permitted generally. Now, as with any rule, there are exceptions, and the legislature has made some exceptions. You're not free to make exceptions to that, but the legislature has made some, and we'll talk about those later. And so, to come up with a business license ordinance that is based on gross income means that it's going to be graduated according to the gross income the business receives. You have the right to classify businesses. The Supreme Court has upheld that principle, and to charge different rates to different classes of businesses. What you must do in order to provide equal protection is to treat every business that's in the same classification or should be in the same classification the same. So you can charge different rates to different classes, but within the class you have to treat everybody the same. As I said, the legislature has carved out a few exceptions to that, and you don't have the privilege of contesting what the legislature does, and so you have to abide by that. This system was developed in the 1970s, and we didn't invent it in South Carolina. Some Georgia Tech professors came up with the concept for the state of Georgia to use the Standard Industrial Classification Manual published by the federal government, which is nothing but a statistical tool. It has nothing to do with taxes or fees or anything else. It was a method of putting businesses that have similar operational characteristics into the same class for statistical purposes. And then the government, each year, or in the case of IRS statistics, every 3 or 4 years, publishes statistics keyed to those standard industrial classification numbers. Now, they did that until 1997 under the Standard Industrial Classification System, and then they came out with the new North American Industry Classification System that Roger referred to, and it's this book. It does essentially the same thing, however, it is different from the SIC manual in many respects because it has businesses that didn't exist under the SIC system, computer, communication, technology, technical fields. There are businesses that exist now that didn't exist earlier. And so it's a better tool because all the new statistics are going to be published keyed to this. Plus the fact, as Roger mentioned, all businesses have to use the next number on their federal tax returns. So it gives you a way to correlate with your license ordinance if you use that system. Take a look, if you will. I did a couple of handouts. The first one is a summary of how the system, based on the ability to pay, was devised. In the early 70s, we had a rash of lawsuits all over the state against municipalities contesting the validity and constitutionality of their license ordinances on the basis that there was no rational system of classification. Insurance companies primarily brought those suits. And so it was recognized that we needed to have a way to defend these ordinances by having a rational basis for classifications. And so we looked at the Georgia system and decided that it could be adapted to South Carolina use. Not all of it could be used because in Georgia they allowed a factor of the number of employees in a business, for instance, to come into the picture. And our law doesn't allow that. So we adapted that, went to the nationwide IRS statistics on income, reported on income tax returns for proprietorships, partnerships, and corporations in each of the standard industrial classification sectors, and computed what we call a profit index from those statistics for each major class of businesses. Now, why do this? Because our Supreme Court in the late 1800s said that the privilege tax is in support of the government, and the businesses that pay it according to their ability to pay. And so the best measure of ability to pay is the ability to make a profit. Not necessarily whether you do actually make a profit in your private business practices, but whether or not nationwide statistics show that that class of business has the ability to make a certain level of profit. And so that's what this system is based on. If you look at the second page of the handout, what we did was we plotted for each of the major business groups a profit index and then connected the dots, and you come out with almost a straight line. The upper end of that line goes up a little bit when you run into businesses like lawyers, accountants, doctors, real estate, professional engineers, that sort of thing. But it's almost a straight line. Then what we did is we divided the profit indexes into seven equal increments. Why seven? It's just a convenient number. Could have been 10. Could have been 5. We tried 6 to start with and found out that we really needed another one to make it workable. So that's why 7. I'll pause here to tell you that I had a hand in your adopting this system in 1979. The original text of that ordinance came out of my typewriter, so I'm familiar with your system. Okay. What we did then was pick all of the SIC groups of businesses that came under that first line and said they have the lowest ability to make a profit, therefore they're in the lowest class, class 1. And we did that in even steps for 7 classes. Then we manually classified all of your businesses in accordance with that system, and that's how your rate classes were established. Now notice I said that we did it in even increments. If you look at your rates, they go up in even steps from class 1 to class 7. Yours go up 15 cents per class in the per thousand rate. It's vitally important that you maintain even increments between those classes. If you change your rates in a fashion that destroys that, then you destroy the integrity of the system. I want you to understand the basis for that. Is this system constitutional? Yes. The first city in the state to adopt it was the city of North Charleston, just after it became a city. We put it in 1975, I believe. And since they were the first, they got the first lawsuit. The Supreme Court said, yes, this system is constitutional. And so we also know in an Aiken case, if you're familiar with the Southern Bell case against Aiken many years ago, the Supreme Court also said that your ordinance was constitutional based on this system. So we have two decisions that say that. If you have a rational basis for the classification, and your rates produce the level of revenue that you need for your general fund, and that's the purpose of the business license, is to support the general fund. It's not earmarked for any specific purpose. It simply goes into the general fund. Then that serves the legislative purpose for the tax. Who decides what level of rates you have? The council decides that within the parameters that I've just outlined, keeping in mind even increments, a rational basis for classification, treat everybody in the same class the same way unless the legislature has said otherwise, then you have freedom to legislatively set the level of rates. How do you do that? Well, the easy way to do it is to determine how much revenue you need to generate in order to balance your budget from this source, and then you work backwards and come up with rates that produce that revenue based on the reported gross income of your businesses. If you decide you want to change from the system you have to the next system, let me just briefly touch on what that would involve, because it will involve manually reclassifying every business under the new NAICS numbers. The old SIC system uses 4 digits, NAICS uses 6. There is not a direct correlation in every instance between the SIC major group classification and the NAICS classification. Some businesses have been split out and they have changed their groups simply because they found that the old system didn't work in today's world with the new types of businesses that came out. That means that your staff can't go in and take the SIC numbers and directly convert them to NAICS. It's a manual process and each individual has to be looked at. Once you do that, then you group the NAICS sectors into classes according to the latest IRS statistics. Now, I'm not sure what IRS statistics, for what year the IRS statistics that your ordinance is based on. Periodically you can update it, and I don't know if it's been updated. Not important. The latest ones that we've got in the model ordinance are 1997, because they only come out every 3 or 4 years, and then they're late publishing, as generally the federal government is late doing most things. And by the time you crank it into the system, you're going to be 5 or 6 years behind those numbers anyway. So those two things, the assignment of new NAICS codes and the shifting of rate classes because of the changes in the IRS statistics, would cause your ordinance to shift businesses from one rate class to another. Some go up, some go down. Usually the movement is only one rate class change. Why? Because the economic situation changes over the years, and businesses that in one decade have a certain ability to make a profit, in the next decade don't have the same ability. That's one of the features of this system that we thought made it attractive, is that you could update it periodically to reflect what was going on in the nationwide economy. Now, that's a labor-intensive process, and Roger mentioned about 6 months, and we chatted about this earlier, and I think that's a, if anything, a conservative estimate on the amount of time it would take your staff to do this. The next handout I gave you is a green sheet, because I thought you would be interested not only in the sheet that Roger gave you showing you the dollar amounts, comparing how your license ordinance stacks up with some of the other cities, but on the actual rates. Those on this sheet, I picked out 15 just at random, all have the same type of ordinance that you have. And I gave you the basic rates for Class 1 and Class 7. You don't really need the intermediate ones. And then showed you what the increment is between classes. This is just to give you a feel for how other municipalities have treated this and how they've structured their rates in order to produce the revenue that they need. And you will notice that some are a little lower than yours. 5 or 6 of them are considerably higher than yours. I think this tells you that your rates are pretty much in line with the median over the state. If you chose a different starting point than 85 cents per thousand for your rate class one, for instance, and wanted to apply the same 15 cent increment, then you could substantially alter your gross revenues, either up or down, however you chose to do that. If you want to change your rates by a flat percentage, you can do that, as long as you do it across the board and maintain the even increments. You can change them one penny, for that matter, as long as you change it a penny in each group. Now, I mentioned earlier that the legislature had tinkered with some of the businesses, and let me just mention a couple of those that don't fit this system. And that's why there is a Class 8 in your ordinance. That's sort of a catch-all. It's a grouping of individual subclasses, actually. It's not a general class. The legislature has said that railroads are to be taxed based on the population of the city. It has nothing to do with gross income. How would you ever figure the gross income from railroad producing activities in your city? So that's something they've chosen to do. Insurance companies, because the risk that they insure directly depend on your police, fire, building inspection, other code services, probably to a greater extent than most other businesses, and yet they pay little or no ad valorem taxes to you. The legislature has allowed you to charge up to 2%, which is $20 per thousand if you want to relate it to your other rates, to insurance companies because of that. And that has been tested in court in a Spartanburg case and has been upheld. Right now you subscribe to the Municipal Association's program, which collects this for you, and it makes it very convenient. Recently, the legislature has decided to involve itself in the setting of rates for telecommunication providers, telephone companies. And so there are state-mandated rates that if you're going to charge them, these are the maximum rates that you can charge. And in doing that, they greatly reduce the franchise fee that you may charge a telecommunication company. And they have set flat franchise fees based on population of municipalities. The reason for this is a franchise, and we need to talk about that a little bit right here so you understand the difference. We usually talk in terms of franchise fees and business license fees sometimes in the same breath, but they're two different animals. Franchise fee is a fee charged for the use of your streets to run lines to serve people in your city. Traditionally, telephone companies, gas companies, power companies are franchised. But when the cellular telephone system came out, all of a sudden you had a communication system that could operate using towers located on private property and didn't use your streets. And so the telephone companies that were paying franchise fees based on a percentage of revenue felt like the cell companies were getting a windfall. And that's why they went to the legislature and got this law passed. So now that emphasis has been put back on business licenses for telecommunication providers, and a very modest franchise fee is all you can charge. That does not apply to electric and gas companies, or any other company that needs to put a line in your streets. You still handle them by franchise, and it's totally separate. It's almost a contractual thing. Totally different from the business license. Franchise fee is not a tax. It's a fee, in effect, like rent for the use of your streets. There are a couple of other businesses in your rate class 8 that, because of either state or local considerations that override the general system, have been put there. You'll find contractors in class 8 not because their rate is different from what it would be if they were put into the system, because usually that rate is exactly what it would be, but because there's some extra language that was needed on requirements for reporting subcontractors and making determinations as to what constitutes doing business and this sort of thing. And it was a convenient place to put them in Class 8. But their rates, generally, I think, in yours are probably Class 3 rates. It's not, not something that gives them any particular special treatment. Amusement machines, for a while we had video poker, and that was set by state law. We don't have that anymore, but you still have a general amusement machine classification. In connection with the insurance companies, there are insurance brokers who write a particular kind of insurance policy that are also taxed in addition to the insurance companies at a 2% rate. Insurance agents are not in that class. They are in their normal class under the system because they're in a different business from insurance companies. Insurance companies insure risk. Insurance agents write policies and adjust claims. So that's appropriate. There may be a few others like bars, pawn shops, circuses, and things like that that for overriding local reasons such as having to provide extra services, law enforcement, that sort of thing, regulation, are put in Class 8. And the court has found no problem with that. Now, have I bored you to death with this? But I want you to understand that this is how your system works. What you have the ability to do is adjust these rates. You can abolish them totally. You don't have to have a business license. It's not mandated. If you have it, the rules that I've just outlined are the rules that you may operate within and within those parameters. You can't just go out and pick out one particular kind of business and change the rates on that business. You destroy the integrity of the whole system, and you destroy the equal protection that the Constitution requires. And if challenged, then the court would strike that down very quickly. But beyond that, if you do it within the system, then you have the flexibility that we talked about. I'll be glad to try to answer any questions you have.
Mr. Bates, I have one question, and perhaps it's confusion on my part, but this Class 8 you talk about, it's a all-purpose category. Don't they have to be treated equally as
no,
well?
No, sir. That's what I was explaining.
The law seems to imply that everybody has to be treated equally.
Well, they do, except that the legislature, in its wisdom, has decided that some businesses don't have to be treated equally, and they've decided how you will do that. So you don't have a choice. You can't challenge the legislature.
Oh, but that means in Class 8, however, we can arbitrarily set the rate?
Let's not use the word arbitrary, because you don't normally use that word in connection with a legislative action or a tax.
but it is.
You have wide discretion,
okay,
in what you may do to rates in that class, but you have to first find a rational basis for putting a business in that class. You can't just go in and pluck one out of the system and put them there. There has to be some rational basis for doing it. While it's not a tax, a business license is not a tax on the benefits received, the court has said that you can look at overall tax burden in determining how to treat businesses. That's why they upheld the 2% license rate on insurance companies, as I explained. Additional regulation, additional police protection, that sort of thing, justifies putting bars, nightclubs, that sort of thing in Class 8. But you've got to find a rational basis before you can put a business there. The businesses in your ordinance are the ones that are traditionally there statewide. There's been no challenge to that, and I would be hard-pressed to think of another business that should be put in Class 8 simply because you can't come up with a rational basis to do it.
Can we have an exemption for a certain amount of gross if it's done across the board, or is that
an exemption
like the legislature did with the homestead exemption on houses?
No, sir. There's no provision for that. What you can do if you want to try to do that is adjust the threshold for your base fee.
Yeah,
now, let me warn you about that. Don't think that you can come in and say, okay, we're going to charge everybody $30 on the first $200,000 of income. what you've done then is you've pitched it to the point that it's almost like a flat tax, and you're penalizing the smaller businesses when you do that. So I don't think a court will let that stand. I know of some cities that have gone to as high as a minimum on the first $10,000. I don't really know why, but they chose to do that. We recommended the $2,000 level, and it is based on gross income because that's what the law says it has to be based on, simply to give you a threshold to at least pay a minimum fee that will cover the administrative cost of handling the paperwork. That's really all that fee is there for. Otherwise, you could just have it on gross income across the board. But if you had some small business like a part-time vendor who came to town and didn't produce but $1,000 gross revenue in a year, and your fee was 85 cents for $1,000, all you'd get out of them was 85 cents. It's not worth the time and trouble for the staff to do the paperwork for that kind of fee. So there needs to be that threshold. But it's still based on gross income, as you notice. Yes, you have some flexibility there, but I just caution you to be careful not to raise it to the level that what you're doing then is penalizing the small business.
How do we end up penalizing a small business if we charge just a flat fee for the first $200,000?
Well, suppose the small business only has $5,000 gross income. He's paying the same fee that the guy that did several hundred thousand dollars.
So even though our fee were like $50, it would still be even though the fee was $50, they would have to be protected against us for charging $50?
No, they would have to be protected against someone else who had a substantially higher income not paying a fair share. The whole principle of this system is to provide an equitable way to levy the tax based on ability to pay. And that's why a flat fee will not stand court scrutiny. You put a flat fee on, that means a small business is paying the same thing that a large business is paying, and it has nothing to do with gross income or ability to pay.
So who would come after us on that? The municipal association?
A business person who was discriminated against would come.
But if our flat fee were lower than what they were already paying?
Well, you're asking me to play court now.
Well, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I just never like answers where it's so complicated that we can't possibly do anything. I just don't think that at this level of government that should be our answer, you know.
Well, this is not that complicated if you stay within the rules. Mm-hmm. Your system follows the rules. The present system follows the rules. It's been held constitutional by our court, by the Supreme Court. When you get into trouble is when you start tinkering with it. And I would urge you not to come up with innovative ways to tinker with it. You've done that in the past and fortunately seen the light and straightened that out. But
with your experience in the municipal association, do you not think that this excise tax has hurt South Carolina municipalities in their efforts to attract business to stay within the city limits?
Absolutely not. This is a nationwide thing. We probably charge lower fees than most states do. Think about it. Your highest rate is $1.75 per thousand. That means when a business takes in $1,000, they pay you $1.75. It's not a burdensome tax. It's the least burdensome tax that you have.
But that's not just within your city where they take in that money. The way our business license is, if they are a business that runs international or national, they pay thousands of dollars because they have to pay on every dollar of gross receipts.
They pay on every dollar of gross receipts that they do not pay a tax on to some other taxing authority for that same. You don't double tax them.
No, but that
and
means
if they have a place of business here, mm-hmm. Our state Supreme Court in at least two decisions, one in the 1930s and one just about 10 years ago, has said that is appropriate.
But my experience with what I've heard comments from people, and I hope they'll comment tonight, is that they aren't taxed by other authorities like this.
Well, if they are, all they have to do under your ordinance is show.
But they aren't.
Pay tax on
That's
them.
What I'm saying. They are not.
They are not.
Right. Therefore, they have to pay tax on whatever they earn anywhere here.
That's right. All I'm saying is the state Supreme Court has said that that is appropriate. I've given Gary a copy of the most recent case that says that.
And this is what other states are doing, Roy? Other cities are doing?
Yeah, you really don't need to look beyond the borders of South Carolina because other states have different factors. Like I said, Georgia allows a number of employees to be factored into the business license rate, which our state does not. But you are very much in line from the state of South Carolina, no question about it.
Yeah, we... Mm-hmm. If a business from a moving company comes into Aiken, in other words, they're from Augusta and they're moving a family into Aiken, we have the right to expect him to get a business license for that move. Is that correct?
No, sir. Unfortunately, that's one of the areas the legislature has said you may only tax carriers in their principal place of business. Now, if they have their business located here, then yes. But if they're just coming from Augusta,
right, now,
no.
Think about how unfair that is. We have a
it is unfair.
We have a moving company here in Aiken. He pays on everything he generates everywhere, but a mover can come into Aiken from Augusta. He don't pay any business.
That's right. You're right.
There's nothing we can do.
It's unfair, but the legislature has carved that out and said you can't do that.
But
a wholesaler is the same thing. If you've got a wholesaler in Columbia who delivers to retailers in Aiken and he has no place of business in Aiken, he doesn't pay you any tax because the legislature has carved that out and said you only pay where he has a principal place of business.
Can we do anything to try to make that a fair, in other words, give those companies that are discriminate against, if you want to say that, that we help them with some level that they don't pay on the... I don't quite understand if we said you will not pay on the first 25,000, everybody. In other words, pick a number.
Quarter of a million.
Or whatever. In other words, where you get an exemption from the city saying if you do X, you do not pay anything on this on the first part of this and treat it across the board. Can we do that?
I can't say that I can cite a case to you that says you can't do that, but I would caution you that what you're doing is getting very close to setting flat fees for a certain portion of the gross income.
Well, what I'm
the
saying
flat
is
flat fee being zero for a certain
you see what I'm saying? I mean,
portion.
for the small businessman, I don't see where we get... I can say the bigger ones would say, wait a minute, we're paying more because you're giving the small guy a break.
Yes. Right. That's right. Another way to do it is to go back and use a lower starting point per thousand in your lower rate classes if you want to try to give the lower rate classes a break. I'm not sure.
But on a contractor, if they build a house in Aiken, those people who don't have a business license in Aiken, they come in and get a build.
Yes, they do. If they come in and engage in business in your city, they have to have.
Well, explain the difference between that and a move. I don't understand. Why can't we do
There's
it?
Not any difference except the state legislature has said that on carriers, you cannot tax them except at their place of principal business. It's an arbitrary thing the legislature did. I'm not.
So you're paying the tax in Georgia. That mover's paying the tax over in Augusta, same as the mover would here in Aiken if he moved somebody out of Augusta.
Well, that's right.
He's still paying the tax. It's not coming to us.
Yeah. Now, no tax system is perfect. I don't mean to stand here and tell you that the system you've got is perfect. It's not. It's impossible to devise one that's perfect, particularly when the legislature is tinkered with it. What I will say is that what you've got is the most equitable system that anybody has come up with in this state.
Mr. Bates, have you dealt with any cities who switched over to the NIAC system? Have you dealt with any cities who switched to the new code?
Yes, five or six of them have. It's a slow process because obviously it's not politically popular to come in and do anything with business license ordinance. But there's some that are now working on it. I've worked with four or five, and I know two or three others that are working on it.
In your opinion, is it a fairer excise tax class? Is it fairer than the? Or can you answer that?
You mean the new system, yeah. Is it fairer than yours?
Is it fairer?
It's basically the same as your system. All you're doing is using a different set of numbers to classify, and some slight adjustments in it. But does it
do a better job of analyzing the ability to pay? If our system is older and this is newer, does it do a better job of analyzing the ability to pay?
The job of analyzing the ability to pay comes from IRS statistics, not SIC or NAICS system. All these books do is say these businesses have similar operational characteristics, and so we're going to put them in this group, give them this name and this number. The statistics that are published are keyed to those numbers. The statistics from the IRS and the calculations made from that determine which rate class you go into under that system. So whether your system is up to date or not depends on which year you use the IRS statistics from. If you go back to 1970, obviously you're outdated.
So at that point, what we're saying is at a minimum, we're going to have to update our figures at the minimum.
Well, I'll say the system was designed to allow that. And you have some discretion as to how often you want to do that, obviously.
Yeah. What's the year that we're using now? Is it 97?
87.
87? Okay. Now, the NAICS does one other thing, I think you said already. It adds some companies that weren't even in existence back.
Yes. Some of the computer, some of the technical fields, communication and that sort of thing. Plus, it realigns some businesses, because some businesses have changed their characteristics of operation. They don't look like what they did 25 years ago. And so they have tried to make it fit the real world. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, they make adjustments.
Right. So if we went to that system and then used the latest numbers that were out from IRS, whatever they may be, we would see some categories going up, some down.
Yes, sir, you would. There would be adjustments.
We'd be pleasing some groups, some classification of businesses, and not pleasing others.
Right. And the reason for that would be twofold. One is the numbering system changes, and secondly, the changes in economic conditions reflected in the IRS statistics.
Yeah. Can we have more than eight classes of businesses, or is that set in stone? Is that state mandated?
No, the trouble is all the calculations have been done on this kind of system, and you'd have to do your own calculations for profitability to be able to do it. And let me tell you, that's a laborious, time-consuming chore. I don't suggest you try that. The answer is yes, you could, but no, you shouldn't.
Okay.
Speaking of the real world, since we have a lot of people here and we've already talked for an hour, I saw a hand up here, I was...
Yeah, we want everybody to have a speak. We want to give council a chance, though, first shot in a work session. That's what we usually do, make sure we've got our questions as we have them
companies,
now.
For the companies that our SIC does not, we just arbitrarily put them... Like to tell it whatever that the company was, we arbitrarily put them in one of the seven categories.
As I said, we never use the term arbitrary.
Whatever.
But the license inspector has to use his best judgment to
use
fit it.
Use best judgment, put them in one of the seven.
Where it most closely fits.
So, but at least if we go to this new system, we would at least
cover that. Yes, clarify that. It would make the classification job somewhat simpler. Yes.
Roy, I have a question. This is, I'm sure you make a lot of appearances to make this kind of presentation. Have you seen experience changes with municipalities that they made the changes based on some of the recommendations that we've got in our memorandum here with the four items, either adjusting the rates, and if so, what sort of problems they encounter with all these adjustments? I'm just interested in your experience.
My experience has been that you will get some feedback from those businesses that have their rates adjusted slightly upward. You will hear nothing from those whose rates go down, and the dust will settle after the first year of implementation. When you explain to folks that what you are trying to do is make this system as equitable as possible, that means the adjustments are made in order to have everybody pay their fair share under the system. It's hard for them to argue against that.
Unless they just don't want to pay it at all.
Well, that's true. There are people who do not like to pay any taxes,
right.
I'm sure.
I don't think that's what we're asking about, though, tonight. We're just asking about this one.
Yeah. The last sheet I gave you, the yellow one, from time to time I get questions about what kind of tax relief and incentives you can give to new businesses or businesses that produce employment or newly annexed. And the real answer is very little. From a property tax standpoint, you obviously know you can't do anything about that unless it's a manufacturing establishment that fits the constitutional requirements. Business license taxes, there is absolutely no authority for exempting a new business or a newly annexed business from business license taxes or giving them different treatment for any period of time. There is a requirement that for a newly annexed business, you prorate the first year's license tax based on the number of months they are actually in the city during that tax year. Beyond that, there is no authority to do anything, and if you do something different, you probably are violating the equal protection requirement. The other things I won't mention, you can read those at your leisure, but as you can see, there's very little you can do in the way of incentives to get people to come into the city from a tax standpoint. Now, you can find other ways to do it. If you own some land that they need to build an industry on, you can sell it to them at a reasonable price. That's one way you can do it, but you just can't give them tax relief.
Mr. Bates, I have one more question, if I may. And you have so much knowledge on this subject. Yes, this is a nationwide tax. Yes, it's intended to go into our general fund. It's part of our basic tax receipts. Do you have any idea in cities around, are there any statistics of what percentage of the total general fund is created through business licenses?
I have not seen a survey, and as far as I know, the Municipal Association has not done that kind of survey. I don't think it would be hard to find out. It would just be a matter of looking at their budgets, and Al or some of your folks could probably do it. Some telephone calling and get some information like that for you if you need it.
And then I would wonder, based on that, whether we have a historical perspective on it, what percentage of our general fund was produced 10 years ago by the business license, how many business licenses did we have at that time, and sort of get an idea, are the businesses giving a bigger piece of the pie than they used to or not? That's really my question.
Well, I would have to say, since your rates haven't changed in 25 years, that an individual business is not paying a bigger piece of the pie, but I'm sure your ad valorem taxes have gone up considerably since then, and you've got new types of taxes like hospitality and that sort of thing. So my best guess is that you will find that percentage has gone down.
I was struck by the fact that ours now presently supplies 25% of our general fund receipts. And it sounded pretty high to me, actually, when I compared it against other forms of taxation.
Well, you have to remember that you reach some sources of revenue through the business license that you do not reach through ad valorem taxes. You have businesses that pay you business licenses that pay you no ad valorem taxes. And if you didn't have that source, you would have your property taxpayers paying probably an unfair share of the overall tax burden. Mr. Roy?
We have not gone up on our city millage rate for our property taxes in 16 years.
That's excellent.
So
I don't know how you do it.
Perhaps it's possible.
Maybe we know how we do it.
Perhaps it's possible that this is a higher percentage than you might see in some other cities. However, let's go back to the earlier discussion when we first sat down here and started talking. And Mr. LeDuc went over the facts of the survey that was made, and I think this is very important, that you look at the classifications and you compare them with, I think, what, 10 cities, and there are more you can compare them with. But the city of Aikens are lower than 10 or lower of the 11. The city of Aiken is the lowest. So, you know, you've got to put that in your formula, too, when you're talking about. We've been very fortunate. We've had growth in our community, 27% over the 10-year census period, and still going at that rate. That's been a big, big help to the city. We all recognize that. And some of these other things, the one-cent sales tax has been a wonderful asset to the city. So we've been able to accomplish a lot of things, you know, without raising a millage rate on our city property taxes.
Well, you're clearly not out of line on your broken rate structure.
I have a question, Mr. LeDuc. I don't remember your telling me it was 25%. I've heard everything from 1.5 million to now it's 5 million something, and the insurance was included, and then the insurance wasn't included, and what is it? I mean, I thought we said at one point in time that this insurance would be collected no matter what. I don't understand where these numbers are coming from. I've never heard 25% until I read the newspaper yesterday.
You want to answer that, Roy?
Did the 25% or whatever number you gave, did it include franchise fees?
Yes.
There is one. Roy and I were talking about this prior to the meeting, that we do have in here the electrical in that number. And so if we take out the electrical, it would go down to $4.6 million or 21%. All the other areas would be considered business license. I guess I don't look at the telecommunications. I had not looked at the insurance as business license, but those by state legislative enactment are considered business licenses. And so when you add in the telephones, communication, you add in our own utilities, our water and sewer, we have a license fee on that. When you add in the cable TV, that has a license fee on it. And when you add in the insurance and then the 3,000 business licenses that we have, that adds up to $1.5 million. The other ones add up to total $4.6
million. Okay, so $1.5
million is for the 3,000. Mm-hmm. And then there's about four other categories that add up to get you that $4.6
million. Well, I was reading in the municipal newsletter, and it said that there's talks about the telecommunications business license ordinance. So is that a separate ordinance from this one we're talking about?
No, they're talking about the model ordinance that Municipal Association put out for you to put in as a part of your business license ordinance. You've already adopted that. Not the new one, but you've adopted the one that's in operation until the new rates were changed. They got the legislature to increase the rate on telecommunication companies because they found out that the rates that they had approved earlier were not sufficient to keep municipalities from losing revenue. And they went to the legislature on the basis that we don't want cities to lose money, but we don't want them to go up on us. So you will need to adopt that revised one, but you already have one in place with a different rate in it.
Yeah, we'll be making that change in September.
Yeah. Well, I mean, is this all one ball of wax, or are these separate things? If we didn't have a business license excise tax, a business excise tax. I hate calling it a license; it's an excise tax. If we didn't have this excise tax in Aiken, if we were the only municipality that took the opportunity to not have it and encourage business, would we not be able to collect this telecommunications thing
at
all?
You would not.
Nor the insurance thing?
No, you would not.
Not any of them?
That's business license. If you abolish business licenses, then those go too. The franchise fees would not. That's a different.
And those are in here as well?
Yeah, there's $1 million in here of franchise fees.
All right.
So essentially, we would lose the 4.6 or whatever it is.
And that comes up to 21%.
Is that right? If we abolished any one of those, actually, we abolished the rest of them.
I'm not going to say if you abolish any one, because there is a way to classify and charge zero to an entire class of businesses. That could be your starting point. You could charge, you could start off with class one and charge zero and work from there up if you chose to do it. I don't think it's a good idea, but technically, I think you could do that. Now, I mentioned North Charleston being the first city. They had some manufacturing concerns there that paid them a huge amount of ad valorem taxes. And they wanted to classify those manufacturers in a different fashion. And so they came up with the idea that the manufacturers of durable goods had so much ad valorem taxes that they should be in Class 8 and pay little or no business license tax, whereas the manufacturers of non-durable goods would fit into the system. And they built a record of a rational basis for doing that, and the Supreme Court upheld it. So I can't tell you that you can't do that as long as you can find and make a record of a rational basis to do it. But it's very, very tricky. I don't advise you to go into it lightly.
One comment that was in our notes here that was given to us, if we were to decide to make a change, we should get expert help on it. Gary, was that yours? Your comment?
Yeah, it was.
And I'm not sure whether you want to address that a minute, if you would. What kind of expert professional?
Well, I mean, just what you've got here tonight.
Okay, so someone like Roy.
Correct.
Or someone.
Or if there's some. I don't know this group
if
even
you wanna,
exists.
If you want to do it this year. I've been trying to retire for 10 years.
Right.
We're presently working on Clemson's. And should have it done in the next month or two. G.C. Robinette, the former finance director of the city of Columbia, and I have been doing this for 35 years. And we're both trying to quit. We've dissolved a little corporation that we set up, and we've done three since we dissolved the corporation. So if you call us and twist our arms, we might make a proposal to do it. I don't know anybody else that's doing it. Your own staff can do it, but I warn you, it takes time, and if they've never done it before, they have to do some learning along the way.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be understanding about the performance of their duties while they're doing this.
Right, right. Okay. Any other questions right now from council? If we'll just go out to the audience then. I know these gentlemen in the first row are here first thing. So let's start here. Anyone that would like to speak? And we'll just work back that way, and then we'll come forward on this other side. Julian, if you would come up to the mic, please, so we...
We need to get you
on tape.
Roy, he wants to ask you the question.
Yeah, maybe you want to stay up there or sit in the window or something.
Right, let me tell you, I don't answer questions to the general public on behalf of council because I may not give the answer you'd want to give. What I'd rather do if you want to do this is let them pose a question to you. You know the answer, you go ahead and give it. If you want to ask me, then...
Okay, all right.
That's a little cumbersome, but I
understand.
I don't want to build myself a trap.
That's fine.
I'm Julian Dunbar. I'm a Julian Dunbar insurance agent for 32 years here in Aiken. And I'm 82 years old, so I'm the two oldest ones in here in business and otherwise. Okay, if I sell a policy in Barnwell and they give me renewals for 10 years, I have to pay y'all every year on those renewals I get off those policies that I sell in Barnwell. Or sell it outside the city limits. So why wouldn't it be better for me to just move out the city limits? You follow me? Some of these people are going to move out the city limits. All right, I want to ask him whether these companies pay what we call premium tax, these insurance companies. I've got these at my house and my wife in the last 7 days selling insurance in Aiken to my customers, other agents that's sitting out here could be selling these people. Do they pay tax? That's what I want to know. When they sell policies in the city of Aiken, do they pay tax? That's my question.
Okay. Where do you go? You're asking.
I can answer that.
Okay.
I see Geico right on the top. We took Geico to court. City of North Myrtle Beach and the City of Charleston took Geico to court several years ago. They said, oh, we do it by mail. We don't have agents in your state, so we don't have to pay you. And we said, you're wrong. You do. And the state Supreme Court said, yes, you do. They're collecting from Geico and any of these others that they can catch. Yes.
That's in about 5 to 7 days at my house.
Yeah.
Because I'm over 65 years old. Follow me?
The Municipal Association program chases every one of these. Mm-hmm. And they're our collecting program now.
All right. Okay. Now, it wasn't until recent, like 2 or 3 years ago, that we really started collecting.
That's right.
I mean, remember, that number was way low up until about 3 years ago, and now they are paying.
Right. Well, what about an insurance agent that lives in Columbia and comes to Aiken and sells insurance in the city of Aiken? Like one of my products comes in here against me and sells it in Aiken. What does he pay the city of Aiken himself?
He's supposed to have a business license, number one.
If he comes in and actively engages in business, then he is subject to a business license.
Well, I could name you hundreds that don't pay a nickel and come in here and sell insurance and knock it away from we guys in the business here in Aiken.
Well, give us a list.
And that's the problem. Now, I'm a small business. I mean, real small businessman. But I'll tell you this. The way we're going in Aiken, I've been here 32 years, you're not going to get small businesses to come in the city of Aiken. They're going to leave the city of Aiken. They're not going to stay here. So the small business is what built America. Remember that.
Why is that? Why is that, Julian?
Well, it's too many rules and regulations. And when you ask the city to help you do something, you can't get it done.
Oh, boy. Well, I disagree with you on that. I don't know what you're talking about, but I disagree on that. We get things done all the time. And besides that, we're lower than these other communities that we compare with.
Do you want me to mention what I'm talking about?
Well, we can talk about this later. I don't want to take a whole lot of time. You can mention if you want. I'll be here all night. I'm not in a hurry.
But what I want to do is have a closeness between the city people in charge with a small business in Aiken. I've never had but two councilmen to come in my office. I've never had anybody from the Chamber of Commerce to come in my office in 32 years. You follow me? And the small business is what built Aiken.
Right. That's right.
And the big Walmarts, Kmarts, and all like that, they can move out overnight. You follow me?
Sure.
And the
sure.
big businesses are putting out the little businesses. You follow me? That's who's putting in.
Well, now, that seems to be another subject.
Oh, yeah, I know.
You are
collecting these taxes.
Yes, sir.
You sure you are?
Well, I haven't personally checked the list.
Julian.
I know they're collecting from Geico and all the others that operate like Geico, USAA.
Julian, give us a list, please, and we'll check and we'll get back to you. Lex Kirkland, will right there on the front row, we'll get back to you.
Another question.
Okay.
I'm going to sell my business on account of something that he knows about, and I'm going to move out the city of Aiken. Because I own the building, I've owned it for nearly 30 years, and I've got a problem. If I move out the city with my business out the city limits, I still got to pay this tax. Is that correct?
Well, you got to pay double.
I'm talking about tax business license. Double business license outside
double
the city.
Double in the county if you're doing work in
but
the city.
Only for the ones who sell in the city. Is that right? Or everyone?
No, if you're doing business in the city, though, if you're doing business in the city, you have to have a business license. I mean, everybody does. Huh?
Well, look how many people come in here that never buy a license.
Well,
in the city.
I don't know exactly how we can be detectives here and find everybody that does that. Lex, do you want to speak to that subject? I know Al has had a program when he was there.
I don't know the exact numbers, but we have more outside city businesses licensed than inside city businesses.
Lex, I assume you're doing the same things that Al was doing, but he was a detective. He was out there every day riding around, looking at the tags on the vehicles, right? They've got to have a tag.
Basically, Chief Busby told the city
okay.
for businesses, and he
okay.
writes hundreds every year.
Okay.
Good.
So that's one thing we're doing, Julian. Maybe we can do better, but I mean, that's
I believe I reported some to him, so I reported some.
Well, thank you for doing that.
So thank you very much. I don't know how many years I'll be in it, but I hate to move out of the city, but I'm going to have to do it for other reasons if I can sell my building. Thank you very much. But I'm going to still stay in business now till I die. Thank you.
Okay, sir. Thank you, Julian.
Just as clarification, if Julian moves outside, is in the county, and he sells an insurance policy. How does that work?
Sells it in the city to somebody. Sells it to you in the city.
Yeah.
Well, he has to. Everybody
if
has.
He sells
to.
It in his office in the county. If you go out to his office in the county and you buy that policy because you live in the city, he's going to owe tax on it.
Well, let's get an answer.
The risk is that's insured is located. If the risk. The house, the building that the insurer is located in the city, and then he pays you a license tax on that.
And we get that number from the municipal association?
No, you get it from the municipal association only on the companies. You have to collect from the agents yourself.
But when GEICO pays, who gets the benefit of the tax?
When GEICO pays, it's paid through the municipal association system,
so,
and you get
our
all the risks insured here.
Okay.
Someone else on this side? Yes, sir.
My name is Carlos Garcia. I'm the president of RCS Corporation, and with me is Tim Sides, my controller. I want to say that all my dealings with the city of Aiken have been very, very good. Everyone has been very responsive. I called Roger one afternoon, and he was over in a couple of hours. So I don't have anything negative to say about the city of Aiken, and I think you're trying to do an honest job in collecting taxes. But I want to talk about my situation so you can understand where I'm coming from, so you can benefit from it, because I don't believe that you can do anything for me anyway. I think most people here are going to think I'm greedy, but let me tell you where I'm coming from. 10 years ago, I was working at Raytheon. My job was in jeopardy, so I was stupid to start a company, and I went through that struggle of 2 years with no salary and so on. But anyway, we've managed, and we've grown. And I've tried to be a good company. We try to be a good corporate citizen. We have, when it comes to charities, we have a budget of $10,000, which since 1994, we've given away a good $80,000, and that's my favorite thing to do. I love to donate money to the Aiken Technical College Foundation, and the Playhouse, and this and that. We love to do it. We match all the United Way contributions. Now let's talk about this business license. For the last 3 years, our business license fee was $1,500, thanks to that wonderful exemption that was in place for the last 3 years. And then until April, it was taken away. And now, for this year, my business license has gone from $1,500 to $86,000. And I know that next year I'm going to have to pay the city of Aiken $18,000.
I'm sorry, what has it gone to?
$18,000.
$18,000.
Now, from a business standpoint, if you were in my shoes, would you say, okay, I'll just pay the city of Aiken $17,000 versus go buy me a building on the other side of the line, pay nothing, and then in 10, 15 years, I own the building. So from a business standpoint, it doesn't make sense to stay. So, I mean, that's just the reality of it. And let me add this other, which is very important. 95% of all my work, I've had 50 people in Las Vegas working over there, and I pay a flat fee of, I don't know, what is it, $100? $100 a year. But because the business license doesn't say this $100 is for $4 million worth of revenue, I can't deduct it. And so I'm paying the city of Aiken this humongous amount of money. So my plans right now are basically to find me a piece of property in the county or, I don't know, out of state somewhere. In fact, since 95% of my revenue is outside of the city, I don't have to be here. I could be anywhere. So I love the city, and there's nothing that gives me more satisfaction than helping kids with the high school this and high school that, but I can't, at least not for this year, my I have to cut the cord and not give away any donations until I can recoup, because, you know, at $17,000, $18,000 a year, that's quite a whack to absorb in a short time. So, again, my plans are basically to move out of the city, and I'll continue to support the charities in the city of Aiken, but from a business standpoint, I mean, it's a no-brainer. Spend $17,000, or go buy yourself another building and own it. So, you know, in essence, I have to thank the city for giving me this initiative or pushing me in that direction, because in 10 years, I'll own a building. I mean, that's all there is to it.
Anyway. Carlos, in the Las Vegas contract, if you're not paying the city, which would Las Vegas then say, well, you're not paying your tax there, so what you generate in Las Vegas would be taxed at our rate? Is that what
no.
the law says, or is that true?
We have no office in Las Vegas. We do all the work remotely from our Aiken office, so therefore we don't really pay a business license. It's a flat $100 fee. We don't have a physical presence there.
But the point is, this is a question, is that if it's in Vegas...
He's not paying the double tax. He's not complaining.
No, what I'm saying is, would he have to pay a higher fee in Las Vegas if he wasn't paying the fee in Aiken? I remember somebody saying that, you know, you don't get double taxed. In other words,
that's right.
If
he paid on a certain gross income to another jurisdiction, Las Vegas or wherever, he would not pay you on that gross income.
Now, of course, it all depends on what Las Vegas' law says.
That's
as
right.
far as whether they have a business fee
right.
tax.
Right. But the Supreme Court has said that if he's not paying that to somebody else, he pays it to the city where his business is located.
You understand what my question was? Would the city of Las Vegas, if you're not paying any other tax, in other words, you're in the county and there's no excise tax, will the city of Las Vegas charge you?
No, it's $100 flat for any amount of revenue over there.
Pat, for instance, there's some other communities in South Carolina where they have contractual workers at right now, and they're paying a business license in those communities. It amounted to several thousands of dollars. So based on the gross revenue this year, it probably might have been in Aiken $12,000. But because of what he paid in other communities, it lowered that amount to, I think you said, 8,600.
Right. But there are some places like the Savannah Riverside. I could have a $10 million contract at the Savannah Riverside, and I can't deduct that from anybody.
In what state are you reporting all this gross income for income tax purposes?
South Carolina.
He's not paying.
He's not reporting other places.
He's not what? He's not paying taxes in another state.
Well, if he were doing something that required him to file an income tax return there, then that would be obvious that he could prorate based on the activity there.
Are you asking, do we file taxes like in Nevada?
Income tax.
Yes, we do.
On some of the income generated through this office?
Yes, sir.
Right.
We have six different states that we file state income taxes on.
You need to sit down with Lex and talk about that.
Yeah. Does the ordinance not say that you pay a business license tax or an excise tax for another municipality?
And I understand that you do pay Las Vegas some kind of business license fee?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's based on...
It's flat. It's not based on revenue.
That was $100. Is that the $100?
It's $100.
Right.
Where do you pay these other states? You pay other states?
They're varying rates.
Okay.
But it's only based on the work.
Let me get with Lex and see if we can't work out something. I think there may be a chance for some of you.
Yeah, it sounds like there ought to be some reductions. And
but this does point out one of the problems we have. I mean, this is understand exactly what you're saying.
I mean, you're going to have other businesses that are going to come to the city of Aiken. They're going to get a humongous contract at Savannah Riverside. You're going to try to him for $15,000, $20,000 a year in business license fee, and they're going to say, I'll just buy a building over there, and that's it, and I don't have to deal with this. So,
see, that was the reason why we put the $1,500, but then that was thrown out.
Right.
I mean, that was part. We tried to solve that, but then it was ruled that we couldn't do that.
So, you know, it's not I love the city. It's a wonderful place to live in. I'll live in the city. But from a business standpoint, what are you going to do? I mean, ask anyone in the – what would you do?
Well, I understand what you're saying.
And, there may be a way to get you some relief. Let us talk about it.
If you're paying it in other states, it sounds like there ought to be some subtractions there. To
the fact that they don't pay their license fee on growth income may not work to your disadvantage.
That's right. What I understand is we can't charge a flat fee, but they do it in Vegas because of constitution. Did you say that, or is that just the state?
That's state by state.
So all other states don't do this to their businesses. I mean, my cousin's just been here for this last week, and he's from Texas, and they don't do this. They don't pay stuff like this at all. I mean, and he's got a huge – he said, I don't believe this. How do you get anybody to do business in a city in South Carolina? I said, well, maybe that's a question we ought to ask. Maybe that's why we can't get businesses in a lot of municipalities in our state. And I think that maybe we need to do some – take this as an opportunity to do some new thinking about how we can do something that will help our businesses. When I listen to Carlos, this is the kind of business we want in this town, a high-paying business that employs professional people. We don't want to be chasing them outside of the city limits. And if the only way we can... I just think that, for goodness sakes, we've got to start thinking outside the box. And I think about what makes Aiken special. You talk about that, Carlos, and I and we all do, all the time. If all we had here were some museums and a few parkways, do you think people would come back here again and again and again? They come because of our businesses. And why, if we can do stuff for all these other projects we voted for this year, why can't we do something for the existing businesses that make this town what it is? And if it's too doggone complicated, I mean, what you're talking about, Carlos, doing is a big mess. I mean, it's a big accounting fee. It's a big amount of our town time. It's a big amount of your time. We're talking about a big expense here. And I'm not looking to raise anybody's rates, so I don't want to switch to another system. I'm sorry, I'm getting off the track. But I mean, this is the guy we want in the city.
And the other thing is this. My objective is not to be $14 million, but be $100 million. But with this kind of fee, it's a disincentive to stay in the city. Let me just say one last thing about this NACES code, what you call SIP code. I think it would be a nightmare to switch over because it would require a lot of expertise. There's not 50 NACES codes, but thousands. For example, a business like ours, construction, sometimes we do engineering, professional staffing, environmental. I actually have a list of about 50 NACES codes that I could participate in. Are you going to take every one of my contracts and try to split them? And that would be a nightmare to go in that direction. So,
Carl's question.
You're classified according to your principal business. If you do more than one thing, it's your principal business and you do business.
Carlos, switch places with me right here. All right, and you're here trying to figure out where do we make up the $1.5 to $4.5 million. Now, true, I think there's some things we spend money on, Jane, that I would, like we said before, let's go through that budget line and start Xing them out. What do we do when we start saying, we've already got the experts saying, you know, you got to be fair about this, where do I find $1.5 to $4 million? That's, you're sitting over here.
Well, I think you need to look at other communities that have businesses like mine and other very successful businesses, big companies. What do they do? That's what I would be asking. I mean, I'm not in the government business. But I understand what you're trying to do, and my heart goes out to you because you need to balance your budget. But I'm not smart enough to know what other companies are doing. But I know that $18,000, regardless of whether you make a profit or not, it's a little steep.
that you see, Mark. I mean, it is a dilemma. I mean, you know.
It is a dilemma.
Because I know we might be able to cut $1 million out of our, you know, maybe just start slashing and we start cutting services, but then we say, where is the other going to come from?
You don't slash. What you do is you look at this thing we got in our last agenda. We had a $636,000 surplus, and we needed to think about where that money went, and it was already spent by the time we got the notice of the surplus. We voted to pay Woodside Phase 3, $400,000 in curb and gutter money. Maybe we'll stop that stuff if we don't have this cash to use. I mean, I haven't done any exhaustive survey on this. We do have a big, what's it, $14 million in a savings account or something, a contingency account. I mean, we've got stuff we can look at, and we don't have to use words like slash and cut services. We have to look at projects we adopt that the citizens of this community and the businesses in this community are willing to pay for. And if they're willing to pay for it, great. And if they're not, then we need to listen. That's what I think. And Jane, I don't think slash is a word.
Jane, there's one thing that I think this is important. We have serious problems on the south side as far as traffic. And the state will not give us the money we need to fix the state roads. I would like to see us give Roger Roger, we need $650,000 to $700,000 a year to be set up in a fund so we can fix the problems on the roads and cut it. Don't add any more fees. Now, question, and I'm all for it, Jane. I'll vote for this thing tomorrow if somebody can show me how we can do it. If we can do it and still maintain the services and set up the funds we need to try to fix those roads on the south side or wherever they're going to be, I think that's going to be a big priority. I haven't heard anybody come in and say, don't spend any money on infrastructure. You know, I mean, that's a big part. We've got an infrastructure problem in this town, too. So, you know, maybe we can balance it. But you start talking about these kind of numbers, I think there's $600,000 or $700,000, maybe even $1 million in savings in there, Jane. But I'm telling you, we also need to make sure that we're taking care of the infrastructure in this town, or else these people are going to be in here saying, what have y'all done? Why can't you fix Daugherty Road or the Connector Road or these kind of roads? That's what I'm concerned about, too.
Well, that 1% sales tax, all those proposals are on there for infrastructure.
Jane, it won't. The amount of money that we have to try to fix those roads is... it's not all in there. Not that I've seen. It's not. We got design, and we can acquire land, but we cannot widen Daugherty Road or connect both roads in or do the types of things we need to do. Now, I want to cut the budget and set it aside if that's possible. Now, I don't want to raise a single another fee. I want to cut it so those lines at $600,000 you're talking about, I think it's important. And if we have extra, we need to pass it along to the businesses. Now, I agree with you on that.
Let's get something straight here. I can't believe some of the things I'm hearing. It makes it sound like we've got all this extra money in our budget. How quickly we forget that with the telecommunication fee cut that we took and the vehicle taxes that everybody voted for, right? That amounts to almost $1 million a year that we're not getting in our budget now. The $14 million, or whatever the number is, Jane, is a reserve that we have, we put away. Every city is supposed to have a certain amount of money in reserve for catastrophes so that we can run 6 months if something happens. The $600,000 that you're talking about that we could have used for something else and we paid Woodside, those were commitments that we made previously. So that money is just not sitting there waiting for somebody to spend it. And I take exceptions to these kind of remarks. Certainly you can always cut something. We can cut our services. We can cut our landscaping. These are the kinds of things that bring people to Aiken. It's not only the businesses. It's a lot of things that bring people to Aiken. So let's look at this thing a little bit clearer and not jump to conclusions like maybe we'd like to do sometime. We can sit down and look at that budget any day of the week you want to, or anybody wants to. And we can sit and we can talk about, do we cut this, do we cut that?
Yes.
But Roger and I have talked about this a lot, and any cuts we make is going to make a difference in something. Either services, we don't pick up the trash, we don't do certain things. We cut police officers, public safety, we're not going to do that. You know, you don't do something and not lose something else. So that's my take on this thing. And I hate to hear these things rattled off so quickly without remembering some of the things that the cuts that we've had. And we're going to have more.
Well, I'm not rattling them off. My point
is...
I've sat here on these... I know, you and I don't agree on this. So you call me rattling off. Okay.
On things
but
like that, when you say it's sitting there, I don't agree. Because it's committed money that we have thought about and we've committed for certain purposes.
I'd like to hear these comments because what I think we're going to find is that there are a lot of people that would like to have their own money to spend on their business the way they need to, rather than give it to us and us decide whether they're going to get it back
and
not.
And that's fine. Well, again, as Pat said, we don't really need that clapping. I think that shows some disrespect. It doesn't do any good. As Pat has already said, you know, where are we going to get the money to put back in the budget if we just cut the business fee, business license?
But I think the other thing here, we can do certain things like adjusting the 15 ratchet. We need to look at this. There's a whole lot of things we can do.
Certainly we can.
Jane, I don't think you're endorsing throwing the whole business tax out, are you?
Well, I want to know what it costs to collect it, because if we're going to have to revise this thing, and that's going to cost 6 months of work, and then it costs $100,000 a year to collect it anyway, right? And then, I mean, I want to know what this process is going to cost all of us, because, I mean, if it's just going to be a wash because we're going to spend so much money revising the whole thing, and then I don't know.
I want to hear
what businesses want in this town.
Okay, next. Who's next over here? Yes, sir.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Carlos.
Thanks, Carlos.
My name is Al Fernandez, and Carlos probably pays more in taxes than I make. But anyway, I have just a comment first. The gentleman made in his first statement that he made here, his comments, that the license fee is a tax. Now, he made reference to the IRS at many points. What I want to know is the IRS does give us an opportunity to adjust our gross. Is there any provision in the law you reference with the criteria that you talked about that will allow this body to adjust, to let us use the adjustment on the gross?
No, sir. There is not.
Where can I find that information, sir?
South Carolina Code Section 5-7-30.
Section 5-30, you said?
7-30.
Is there any law against this body being able to adjust or let us adjust it?
Well, you're not going to find a law. They can't do anything that's contrary or in conflict with the state law. That is their only authorization. If they did something different, it would be in conflict with that.
You ask my question.
Their hands are tied.
And that's all I had.
Okay, sir.
I didn't hear anybody mention adjusting it. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, who's next? Yes, ma'am.
First of all, my name is Linda Shamblin. I own Attitude with Fabric. Very small business. Y'all can help it grow. Number one, it was certainly not in disrespect, and I can't believe you even said that, out of supporting Ms. Bodders and her comments. It had nothing to do with anyone else. It was to just giving her the support of her comments, and I certainly do appreciate them. I came here with an open mind, but curious why we're even looking at changing our tax structure. And it appears pretty obvious that everyone wants more money in the general council. Therefore, we're looking at getting it from small business owners. As a small business owner, obviously, I'm rather opposed to that. If we're getting 25% of our current general fund is coming from small business, I can't fathom that anybody be looking for us to do more. Number one, yes, we pay a tax for the privilege of doing business in Aiken. And it is a privilege. And we speak for myself, but certainly enjoy it, and I'm glad to be able to. But I think we also contribute a tremendous amount other than a large percentage. One-fourth of the general revenues comes from our taxes that we pay. If we're going to look at creating more revenue, I think we ought to look at something besides small business or any business. I do agree that not necessarily in cutting services, but that perhaps as an alternative we look at spending less, especially on certain many items, as a matter of fact. Spend less as opposed to automatically spend everything and then say, well, we need to look at businesses to provide more money because we've chosen to spend it on things that we really didn't have a choice about. If I understood it correctly, there are only 8 classifications that were set forth by legislation. And if we need, and those classifications do not include telecommunications, internet, or any of that, is that correct? Am I understanding that right?
They do include those.
Okay.
You can't tax sales on the internet, if that's what you're
talking about. Or telecommunications.
The federal government is to stop that.
Okay. Then maybe we need to look at proposing to our state legislators of changing those classifications from 8 to a different, because it sounds like there's some businesses are not even in this. If I understood correctly, there are some businesses who aren't paying anything.
Only those businesses that the legislature has specifically dealt with. All other businesses are sent.
Okay, thank you. Because I'm only familiar with my own business, I can only speak from a retail standpoint, but it just appears that the more money that a business makes, it appears that they would have to have more employees. And I don't understand why we can't keep that relative to the number of employees that we have as far as our fees go. Secondly, many businesses, and I'm sure that RSC would fall into this, You take the amount of sales that you make is one item, but the bigger and the greater those sales, the more attorney fees, the more accounting fees, and everything else that goes into that business, not just fees that you pay to the city. I do feel that there are certainly alternatives out there. My suggestion, the number one alternative, is that city control their spending and look at that versus raising taxes, but especially on small businesses, which is what creates the growth in this city.
One question.
Yes.
Go ahead. The reason why we're here is we're trying to look at reducing the taxes on the business.
Well, I came here with that in mind, and I'm like, nah, it doesn't sound like our city council, maybe not, or any government.
No, that's the reason, an individual thing.
But I'm like, wow, that doesn't sound right. But it doesn't appear to be that way, because the comment has been made now 3 times from this group here about our general fund and how we need to put more money into our general fund because we don't have it. Well, when you're talking about lowering my taxes and putting more money into the general fund, something doesn't sound right there.
No, ma'am, I think the question is what of the general fund is generated by the business. We're not talking about raising anybody's. Well,
okay.
Unless we go through a study and we find that it's not fair and somebody. No, we're not talking about raising business taxes that I'm aware of. We're here to see if we can reduce them.
Yeah, Linda, 2 things. I think the general fund came up because someone asked, where does the money from business taxes go?
Right.
So it goes in the general fund.
What percentage of the general fund comes from business taxes?
Not that we're trying to get more money in the general fund.
Right.
The other thing is, I think you said something about, if I understood, maybe making a change from the gross amount to the number of people.
The number of employees, I think, is included in our current system.
You can't do that.
It's not included in our current system?
Well, state law, is that right?
I just keep getting all these things from state about how many employees.
Well, it's very complicated, but it's not. Is that right, Roy? It's not the state of South Carolina.
Authorized by the state law. Gross income is the only basis of the state law except in a specific
okay.
exception to that.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
We're all trying to learn.
I understand. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Butters.
Thank you. Next.
Just one comment. Applause is much more welcome than boos. We don't like the boos. The applauding is all right with me. I don't. We've been booed a lot too. So.
Good evening. My name is Charlie Weiss with the Chamber of Commerce. And Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council, it is great to be here this evening. It seems like as progressive as we are, we continue to have challenges that we're faced with, and that's when you're doing great things, I guess these challenges will continue, and we will continue to have those. The Chamber of Commerce certainly is very much concerned about the viability of our members and the bottom line of each one of the individuals in the business community, not just in the city, but the county and the businesses within the entire region. While the fundamental principles of this of a tax based on the gross receipts of a particular business may not be fair and perhaps inequitable to some, finding and striking that equity is where the challenge certainly begins. The Chamber's Board of Directors discussed this particular issue at the request of Ms. Vauders last week at the board meeting. The board agreed, and the board, I might add, is made up of 20 individuals representing small business as well as large business across the board. We are equitable across the board. The board agreed that additional information was needed prior to any changes being made to the city's business tax system because of the concern the latitude localities would have on the state statutes, which we've been discussing so far. Additionally, members of the board expressed concern in how such a large amount of the city's budget could be replaced by the elimination of the tax. These are based in fundamental principles when it comes to the legal aspect as well as the fiscal aspect. And we hope that you recognize that the Chamber does care about business, bottom line, but we do recognize and the homework has to be done before your Chamber of Commerce just arbitrarily states we need to do away with it. I think that would be fiscally improper to do so. So thank you for allowing me to speak tonight, and we look forward to working on this issue in the future.
Thank you. Thank you, Charlie. Next, please. Anyone else back? Coming on down this way, then?
Mr. Mayor, usually I really am complaining about some of the things the city does. This time I'm not going to. I have here a copy of my license, which Lex did this year.
Excuse me, state who you are for the record.
I'm sorry. I'm Jewel Bradley, and my son and I own Bradley Plumbing and Heating and have for 52 years. My husband did before me.
Thank you.
Okay. I thought most everybody knew.
We do.
Anyway, several years ago, when we used to, and my husband says Miss Houston doesn't live here anymore, I call Mr. Bates because I had always thought that we bought business license based on work we did inside the city. At that time we were doing, first of all, let me clear what we do. We do plumbing, heating, and air conditioning, residential and commercial. Lots of our work is outside the city of Aiken. A lot of it is in the county. We work in three states, North Carolina, Georgia, and South Carolina. So I had carried my little renewal thing to do city license, and I was told that I needed to bring my income tax return. I had never been told that before. So Al and I went round and around. I called Mr. Bates. He tells me that I can deduct any gross receipts if I have purchased a license in another municipality. So this year and last year, I have all of my business licenses that were purchased elsewhere. And I take them to the city, and I deduct that amount. I buy a license based on the values. To me, business license is like sales tax. It is the fairest tax we have in this city. If every mechanical contractor is paid or does pay the same amount I pay based on his gross business. Once you reach, I think, Lex, correct me if I'm wrong or right, once you reach a certain plateau, it reduces, correct? So this year, for instance, my gross receipts were in excess of $7 million. I have roughly $3 million worth of work that was done at Claflin College in Orangeburg. We buy a license on that job. We pay that. If we go back in that same city during that year, we don't pay the flat fees they charge, but we pay a prorated amount based on whatever the total amount of that contract is. So this year I had $2,874,000 that were deducted from my gross. I paid $2,231 for a business license to operate in the city. I paid, what, Lex, so much for every truck, 38 stickers, I believe I bought. But that helps me identify what truck is where, so I have no complaints with that. Only thing, let me say, I have a little bit of trouble, and Mr. Bates clarified this for me several years ago, that in the county, which I can't buy a license anywhere, so I pay Aiken for the revenue that we create within the county, because there are a lot of little small cities that you don't have to buy a license in. So that's my spiel on the license.
Well, very
thank
good.
You very much.
Very good, Ms. Bradley. Thank you.
I'm sorry, Mr. Mayor. I didn't mean to.
Good evening, folks. I'm Joe Harrison. I'm a State Farm agent here downtown. I wanted to voice my concern over this license fee because prior to 2002, there wasn't one. This is a relatively new fee. And my biggest problem with the fairness of the fee to our agency is that the municipalities are already collecting a percentage of every premium dollar that comes from people inside the city. And I'm not sure if I understood correctly, Fred, if I outgrow my current building, which we just about have, if I built a larger building and it's outside the city limits, I wouldn't have to pay this fee at all, would I not?
Only to the people that you're selling policies to inside the city.
But you're collecting that through the premium tax.
Well, Mr. Bates can... technically, I don't know.
Premium tax is a tax on the insurance company. It is not a tax on the agent. They don't pay your taxes. You're in business to sell policies, adjust claims, whatever you do in connection with servicing those policies. The company is in the business of insuring risk. Two different businesses, two different classifications in the SIC.
But it's the same gross receipts. It's the same dollar being taxed twice.
So is a wholesaler and retailer, but that you're not taxing the dollar. You're taxing the privilege of doing business based on gross income.
Well, I agree with you on one item, and that is a privilege to do business in Aiken. It's a wonderful town, and we're tickled to death to be here. But I don't see that, and other, North Augusta doesn't charge this kind of fee to the agents over there, and a flat fee, even though Mr. Bates says that a flat fee would be, you know, discriminatory against the little person. Actually, if it's a smaller fee or an equal fee to what they were paying anyway, or they're exempt up to a certain amount of gross receipts, I think it'd be very fair. I don't mind paying a fee to the city, but this year it's right at $1,000, and it's just a brand new tax. And I don't have the ability to pass on fees in the cost of goods sold. Mm-hmm. You know, my costs are, the premiums are set, and taxes are paid on the premium. And I don't mind paying a license fee, although it's the first time in 28 years that I've ever had a license fee. 3 years ago, 2002, since the third year I paid.
I'm curious as to why that is, too. Why is it new, a license
fee? Well, we always felt like our taxes, the premium tax was the tax on our business. And now somebody's figured out, wait a minute, now that's the insurance tax, but we need a business tax in addition to that.
Has that changed?
No,
that hasn't changed.
That hasn't changed. A lot of cities didn't understand it and didn't collect it.
I see what you mean.
It's nothing we were hiding. I mean, it just came up in 2002 and said, by the way, you guys owe us some money.
Okay, when the Municipal Association took over the collection, is that when it happened?
What? Didn't have anything to do with the local agents.
Oh, okay.
The Municipal Association collects taxes from the insurance company.
Okay.
Not the agents that contracted that company to sell their policies. Right. They're an entirely different business. They are subject to a tax, although many municipalities listen to his argument that, hey, you're already getting it from the companies, you shouldn't get it from us. But that's never been correct.
Just a question, clarify. Did the company pass that on to you? Do you have to write them a check to pay him?
No.
To pay the other? Company?
Out of the premium dollars you pay, a percentage of that goes to cities and states and this sort of thing.
He only pays on the commissions he retains, his income. That's all he pays.
But it's gross income, not net income. And there's a huge difference between gross and net.
Well, that's right.
And being taxed on gross and half of my gross goes back out in the way of salaries to my staff, and that's about 50 cents on my dollar, then I'm being taxed on money I don't have. And I just think it's grossly unfair. And you need to figure out another way that we can, you know, pay our share to help with the beautification of downtown and the excellent services that we have.
Well, the gross aspect of it is state law.
Yes.
Right. So what we all need to do is talk to our state representatives about this. If the gross is what is a concern to most everybody, they're the ones that can change that. I mean, we can do it too, but
I understand.
Everybody talking
to 2002, it was a non-issue. They just discovered this the other day, and killing me.
It was there, but they hadn't discovered it with you, I guess. Okay. Is there anyone else who would like to speak? Okay. Mr. Wood?
Thank you, Mr. Bass.
Yes, sir.
My name is Alan Wood. I am a small businessman. I know because my history books tell me that once a tax is imposed, it doesn't matter what the politicians say, they never take it away. Income tax was introduced in Britain, and I think threatens on the pound to pay for a war. And Britain does win wars, and when the war was won, the tax was still preserved. And so I know very well that the business license is here. It is not going to go away. And there's probably very good reason for that. But I would like to make some other points. Firstly, from an economic point of view, I hear that unemployment in the state is fairly high. Secondly, I hear that there's concern about possible job losses at one of the area's biggest employers, which is only going to aggravate the unemployment problem. We want to encourage business. The nation wants to encourage exports. And I agree with the points that Mr. Garcia made earlier, because I got penalized for doing business in Philadelphia. I had to pay tax in Philadelphia for work that I did there. I really think, and I would urge all of you, in coming to a conclusion as to how you finally structure any revisions that you make, that they are made so that, one, business is encouraged to come to Aiken, business is encouraged to grow, to create employment, help create income from other parts of the world, other parts of the country, and not be penalized on those efforts. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Alan. Thank you, sir.
My name's John Wade. I'm John Wade Plumbing. I've got several questions, a couple for the city and a couple for Mr. Bates. Roger, did I understand you there's 3,000 business licenses?
We issued a little over 3,000 last year.
The city and county?
That's total business license, inside and outside.
Okay. I need some clarification on the contractors working in my industry, in the plumbing industry or the heating or air conditioning industry. My understanding is that in the contract industry is that the contractors that are outside the county only pay on their gross receipts that work they did in the city.
For a job.
Lex, you want to clarify that?
Well, if they have a license and they're coming into the city, when they renew their license, they're only going to report the work that they did inside the city vacant, but they pay double the rate that an inside city business like you would pay.
So how do they report these to you? I'm going to give you my tax return. That's going to give you gross receipts, so you know exactly what it is. How are these other businesses going to report this to you so that you've got an accurate rate to charge them?
Well, they report it to us. We can randomly audit them. We can check back with the building permits that are issued to them and, you know, try to get an idea of, you know, if it's matching up. Plus, we have inspectors that are out in the field who kind of have an idea of how much work they're doing. So if they don't, if it doesn't look like they're reporting all the receipts, send them an audit letter and give them to provide documentation more than they want.
How many of those send out?
I'm not sure.
Because what I find in my experience of being out in the field is that there's people from Georgia and other areas, there's people from Barnwell working in here without licenses. Now, I did call you the other day about one from Barnwell to find out, because if I see someone, then that's the first thing that I do.
And there are a few businesses that do that, and we appreciate that all very much.
Their gross receipts, even at double, if we pull $1,000 of gross receipts from someone working outside of the city versus someone being in the city with 100,000 gross receipts, even if it's doubled, that's minuscule. That's no money. So if the people are going to be granted the privilege to work in the city and they are in the county, then why aren't they charged at a different rate than double? Why aren't the standards fair for the outside contractor outside the city versus the inside business person in my field? I don't know any of these other people's fields. I just know my field.
Let me just, maybe I can answer that a little bit. Again, we went ahead and in your field, we looked at a business that would be generating $1.5 million of gross receipts. We charge a business license fee for a contractor doing $1.5 million at $787. When we looked at 11 other cities in the state, Union, of the 11, which is a pretty small little city, charged that same $1.5 million that we charged, $787, charged $4,594, about seven times as much as we do if you were working there. All 11 other cities that we looked at charge a higher fee than we do. Ours is the lowest that we could find of anybody for subcontractors, builders, developers, which are all in a Class 8. Again, when we look at it, we could go ahead and charge a higher rate for outside the city, determine exactly or as much as we can what they're doing inside the city. And for that reason, that's why in the 90s we changed it and doubled the rates to make it more equitable for those that are outside versus inside the city.
I see one of my other questions was that in this, I keep hearing in other council meetings, I hear that we're compared to other cities. We were voted an all-American city because of differences, and the greater that we are, the better that we are. I know that the council needs guidelines. They need to compare stuff. Mayor, you mentioned 10 cities that we were lower on fees. That's one fee that we're in. We're not pulling the whole big picture in here. We're looking at other taxes. Yes, we're lower on property taxes than others, so we're not looking at the big picture. And that's what I'd like to look at. I'm not complaining about what my fee is and what I pay, because I pay a low fee. I only paid $250 last year.
John, we do compare on just about everything that we do. Do you recall the trash discussions we've had on picking up trash?
Mm-hmm.
And we found out that most every community, the county, Augusta, and North Augusta, were higher than us.
Water and sewer.
If you've been reading the paper, if you've been to some of the meetings, you'll know that we compare on all of these major things, and the newspaper can tell you that. So we do comparisons, and the fact that we do, we see we're different, and we're an all-American city, and we're different, and this is just one example of how we're different. We're lower.
Not in every category, though.
Yeah. Take your pick. Look at all the categories we are low in. But we can't be low in everything necessarily.
No,
I mean, we've got to have a nice community, and we've got to spend money doing some things that people like, and the reasons they come to Aiken.
On that subject, Pat, you mentioned about the roadways and the infrastructure. Well, something that I've spoke to the council before on is the water and sewer problem in Aiken. And the last time that it was voted for Public Works to get more money for taking care of sewer and water, mm-hmm. they were granted some money, but they were also cut some employees. There's other places that money can be cut. I do understand that most people like Aiken for the looks and the flowers and stuff. They need to understand what gets the water to these flowers, what takes the water away from them, storms and sewage also.
Would you explain?
So that I think there's other ways of getting off on a tangent.
No, we just want to talk to one of the issues you just mentioned. You said we cut a person, but you didn't say why we cut the person.
No, sir, because I don't know.
Okay, well, it's important to know why a person is cut.
A couple of years ago, we cut a person in administration in utilities, again, because we were trying to keep the rates lower. You are correct in that fact that if we raised our rates up for water and sewer to the rest of the state, we're 35% lower on water and sewer comparison to the average rate inside the state of South Carolina. So, yes, we could go ahead and add probably a dozen more people to our staff for water and sewer if we wanted to raise the rates 35% to meet the state average. It's still not being on the high side, but still just right in the middle. But again, we have tried to keep the rates low. Could we use more people? Certainly we could use more people, as we could with a lot of other services, but we have tried to go ahead and maintain that. Again, we have looked at this recently with the water and sewer by changing out all the meters so that we could maybe go ahead and get the consumption of the volumes that people are using to match actually what is being delivered to them. And hopefully that's going to make up the difference for us. But no, we have not, except for that one position, we have not cut anybody else in utilities that I know of. And I've been with the city for 18 years.
Okay. I just hear the side of the story from the workers, and what we work with them is just not having enough manpower to.
And I wish we had more.
Yeah, certainly we wish we had more. I mean, who doesn't wish they had more people at some point in time to do the work? But you try to run a tight budget. You try to lower your rates, and I think we do a pretty good job. The facts are there. I like to deal with the facts, and you look at the various services we offer and look at the cost compared to other communities. Sure, we're not going to beat them all, but we're going to be on the low side of most every one of them.
I had three other questions for Mr. Bates. If the NAIC was adopted, those are based on national averages of businesses, and those eight categories are cast in stone, or those eight categories can be change, but you weren't recommending that.
No, the NAICS system has nothing to do with rate classes. All it does is group businesses with similar operational characteristics in the same title and number. It's the Internal Revenue Service statistics that dictate what rate class you go in, because the calculation from those statistics show the ability to make a profit for each of those groups of businesses. So the eight classes is just a number that we chose for administrative purposes. It has nothing to do with the NAICS system or the SIC system or the IRS. That's purely a local administrative tool. Your problem is, if they go to NAICS, is it going to increase your tax, right?
No. My problem is being compared to, and this also goes with the using the, if I understood you correctly, on the IRS standards are 5 years behind time. So my problem with this is that right now Aiken in the housing market is just phenomenal in this area. So if we're based, let's say tomorrow or next year, that Aiken has no building, and these builders are taxed on something that was 5 years ago, is there a way that it can be concurrent from year to year, or is there another standard other than the IRS that we can use?
We don't know of another standard that even approaches the fairness of this. The IRS doesn't publish those statistics every year, so it's not possible to do that. And when they publish them, sometimes they're 2 years behind. So it's a built-in lag that we can't really do anything about. It's the best we can do under those circumstances.
So we read the crystal ball. When someone new wants to come into Aiken for a business, make sure they're going to have a lower rate based on 2 years previous.
There is a certain amount of lag and a certain amount of estimation in it, but it's the best system anybody's come up with.
The other one I had for you was, and without going for the Supreme Court, why could it not be based on net income instead of gross income?
Because the legislature has said by statute it has to be on gross income. If you can get the legislature to change it, you can do it. You don't have to go to court to do that. But unless the legislature changes it, this council can't change it.
Okay, and did I understand that correctly also with the other taxes that are tied into this business license, that if they decide to do away with no business license, then they'll also lose the revenue from other things that's tied together?
No, they were talking about business licenses on insurance companies and that sort of thing, but that's still business license. They do away with the business license, and everybody who's subject to business license.
John, if we did away with the 3,000 business license,
right,
which makes up around $1.5 million, then we would have to do away with the business license from insurance companies, cable, water, sewer, telecommunications.
We wouldn't have to do away with the franchise fee.
We would not have to do away with franchise. Anything franchise could stay. But anything's business license would go, but they've obviously
been. You still lose $4 million.
That would be correct.
So
it adds up to 4.6 approximately.
Sounds like some of these arguments need to be brought before legislation and addressed with them. Sounds like some of their stuff is unfair.
Now, let's make an assumption that we kept the revenue the same as what it is currently. If we went on net versus gross, you'd still get in the same amount of money on probably on cable and some of these other ones, but then all the other rates would have to be adjusted. So let's say
you still need the 4.6 million.
If we went and said we're going to still need 4.6 million, then one might go up twice as much, another one might go down half as, be reduced by 50%. Again, assuming you try to keep that same amount of revenue coming in.
So the bottom line is that the city needs X number of dollars to operate like any company does, and you're going to get it somewhere. And
Or cut somewhere.
Or we could cut something
somewhere. Well, that's something that I was talking about, the infrastructure. It definitely doesn't need to be cut on. Thank you.
If you did it on debt, you'd wind up having to file an extensive return to the city for a business license purpose, showing all your deductions, very much like your income tax. would be another vertical. I don't think they'll ever change that.
Thank you, John. Anyone else would like to speak?
Hi, my name's Deb Kohler, and I'm the practice manager for Lee Grantham, MD. And we are a solo practitioner downtown Aiken on Waterloo Street. Last year, we grossed $700,000, and of that, we are paying about $1,100 in business tax to the state, to the city, above our state taxes and, of course, our property taxes for being in the city. For us, that's a lot of money, considering that before we even get taxed, we do about $25,000 in true charity work that never gets written on our books anywhere. Nowhere does it get written off. We do not in any way get any of that money back. Between ACTS, which is the area churches serving together, and the Lions Club and some other private organizations, they send us poor people, we see them, and we charge nothing. And so that's at least $25,000. I've ran all my numbers. And then we take care of a huge number of Medicaid patients, especially being in the city of Aiken. In the north part of this city, there's a fairly significant population of poor folks who need our help. We do not make a dime on Medicaid, and anybody that's in solo practice will tell you that. Every single dollar that goes into our coffers for Medicaid actually is going towards expenses. We do not make any money on Medicaid. We then also have a fairly large senior base since we are an ophthalmologist, and most of our patients are 65 plus. We make about, on a $100 charge, Medicare will pay us $60 on that charge. And of that $60, $50 of it goes towards our expenses. That's our employees, all the expenses we have in running our business here in downtown Aiken. So we make $10 on that $100 charge. Last year, after we paid all of our expenses, Dr. Grantham's take-home salary of gross was $150,000 for a physician with a fellowship in cornea from Duke University. So when he's not being overpaid. So I don't have a problem coming to you and feeling a little upset that I'm paying $1,100 to this city when I hear that there are people making $7 million gross who are paying $250. I don't know how we got this concept of ability to pay, and that ability to pay meant that doctors were in the highest bracket. I'm very concerned about that. I don't know where that arbitrary decision was made, but right now, we do a small business in optical sales. We sell glasses in our shop, and it's a very small part of our business, but we do some retail. But even that portion of our business, I can't take at the retail level because we are a physician, and we are in the highest bracket of these eight brackets that you've talked about. And so when I pay $1,100 for my business tax every year, and 2 years ago, I was not in the city of Aiken. I was in Aiken County. And like many of the physicians who are staying in Aiken County for that very reason, if I had known that every year I was going to pay anywhere from $1,100 to $2,000 as a business tax to the city, I would have had to have said, okay, over the next 15 years, which is what we'll probably be in practice, and then we'll sell our practice to someone else, how much money is that? And will that be off? What are my services for that amount of money? And that amount of money, if I stayed in the county, I can provide a pension fund for my small staff of seven or eight people, and which I have not been able to do because the way health care has become, physicians have taken the biggest hit, and they continue to take the biggest hit on managed care, and we're at a point where, you know, we're not going to move out for $1,100, but if we had the decision to make over again, because we've only been in the city for less than 2 years, and if we had known, because we didn't know, we live downtown, we love downtown, we support downtown, and our home is here and our business is here. here, but I don't know that we would have made that move. We bought a $400,000 building downtown to run our medical practice out of, and I don't know that we would have done that. I think we might have stayed in the county if we had known that every year, and over the next 20 years, if we're in practice that long, if our health holds out, that we were going to spend $20,000 to $30,000 just in city tax, when I already pay, you know, a city personal property tax on that $400,000 building and on my home. I mean, it's getting to the point where I just heard someone who's got a gross of $7 million who pays $250 to you, you know, and I'm going to be paying $1,100. And you know, maybe they pay a flat fee in Bamberg or wherever, but I take care of patients for five counties. Yes, I take care of Aiken County, and there's not going to be anyone in my practice turned away because they don't have any money. But I also take care of four other counties that they bring poor people into this city. And I think at some point in time you have to say, why are we continuing to, you know, make arbitrary decisions about what bracket people should be in? It should be based on, you know, if it's gross, it's gross. It's not the ability to pay. I don't understand that concept. I don't know what that means. And, you know, if someone's grossing $7 million, well, let them pay taxes on $7 million. We grossed $700,000 as a solo practitioner, and we took home $150,000. The rest of it was all in expenses that went right back into this community. It didn't go anywhere else. It went to our insurance agents. It went to our employees. It went to the utilities. It went to the taxes. And, you know, at this point, I want to go back and talk to Mr. Bates and say, you know, how do I sign up for $250? Because I'd be happy to pay $250. I'd even be happy to pay $500. But when you start talking $11, $12, $15, $18, $2,000 on a small amount like we're making, that's crazy. And so that's the way we really feel in small business America right now, especially those who are at the top of the rate, which we don't know how we got there to begin with.
Deb, two points. I'm not sure. I don't remember that number, the 250. Mr. Wade, can you clarify that?
My gross receipts are $320,000, $340,000 for last year, and Bradley's was jewelry.
Mine was $7 million, but I also have just started a school job in Greenville County. I pay $3 per thousand in Greenville for a license for one job.
Yeah. Where did the $250 that you quoted come from, Deb?
She just said that she's going to pay Mr. Bates $250 this year for her Aiken County tax.
No.
And then her other contracts.
Whoa, whoa.
Wait a minute. Beg your pardon?
My
$250. Okay. I paid the city $2,200 and some odd dollars. Mr. Bates doesn't accept money for anything.
I know that. You
well,
pay $2,200
department. So, all right, so she only pays $2,200 on
$7,000. One of the things, we got to make sure.
I'm going to pay half that on $700,000. She makes, so a particular, and I'm talking Ms. Bradley because I love Ms. Bradley. I love her company. But I'm talking a company that makes 10 times what we make, and then we make, and they only pay half what we pay.
Well, I don't know who that is.
I think she needs to clarify that because you may not be given the full amount to Aiken County, but the
but everybody else has a flat tax. You go in and you say, okay, I'm doing $10,000 worth of business. Pay me $25. It's not this gross.
And it's five counties or five different locations within the state.
No place in South Carolina has a flat business license tax.
No, absolutely not.
No.
How much total do you pay in taxes, Mrs. Bradley, would you have
Deb, I have one other point to make. You mentioned twice, I think, arbitrary classifications.
Now, I just don't know.
We've heard all night here that they're not arbitrary. They're not arbitrary. Is that right, Mr. Bates?
That's right.
The IRS is involved, and
your old system was arbitrary
before 1979. Before 79.
What I don't understand is people who are making significantly more are paying percentage-wise significantly less, and those folks who. So I mean, there is a difference here. I mean, I'm paying a higher rate than a contractor. and I don't know why I'm paying a higher rate as a healthcare professional who spends a lot of time in the hospital for free than a contractor who, I don't know how much free they give. I just really don't know, and it doesn't matter to me, but they are not being taxed fairly, in my opinion, when I'm paying more than a contractor is being paid.
And I find the rates arbitrary. I don't care what the darn book says, because I know with physicians, there are plenty of physicians that have very high overhead and plenty of physicians that have very low overhead. And let me just give you a specific example of a physician that talked to me the other night. Frank DeBona gives Procrit shots, which average about $300 a piece. By the way, when you hear that ad on TV, everybody should get Procrit. The shots are like $300 a piece, folks. The thing is, here we go. So he says next year Medicare is going to pay him his invoice price plus 6%. Well, after he pays the city tax and state tax of 6%, that leaves him at zero. Then he gets to pay his business license excise tax on the money he gets from giving the Procrit shots. Now, this is a mess. It really is a mess. And that's what I'm objecting to. And you can, I mean, that is, there's,
I'm not asking you to handle the entire healthcare system. We know it's under crisis right now. But what I am asking is when contractors are paying significantly less than healthcare professionals, when it comes dollar for dollar, I don't understand that.
Well, one of this question, the percentage, as far as Jewel, you was $7 million gross. I mean, you know, comparing it, isn't part of this that there is some percentages in there that they're trying to figure out about how much they do get to keep? Because if you took 21%, I mean, 150,000 divided by 7 times, 21%. If you take 21% of 7 million, that meant you would take home $1,470,000. I don't think you're taking home $1,470,000. So I mean, isn't that part of where this? I don't like the ability to pay thing either, but that's part of what we're talking about. I mean, I don't think, Jewel, that you took home $1.4 million, the 21%. But is that part of what we're talking about?
The ability to pay concept came in the state Supreme Court pronouncement that was an appropriate place.
Excuse you, the microphone, please.
Yes. The ability to pay concept came from the state Supreme Court's decision that said that ability to pay was an appropriate basis to consider business license classifications. The way this system is set up, that ability to pay is determined from the ability to make a profit based on national Internal Revenue Service returns taken from actual income tax returns from businesses in each of the classifications. A comparison of gross income with net income for each of those classifications determines the index of ability to make a profit. And it just happens that nationwide, lawyers, accountants, doctors, real estate agents, I don't know, several others.
Engineers.
Have higher indexes of profitability under those statistics than grocery stores, which are the lowest. Mm-hmm. There's nothing arbitrary about that. That's just simply the way the system is built.
And
it's a statistical sampling, which is recognized as the broadest possible sampling because it is nationwide. If you look at individual businesses, you'll find some businesses that have a loss in a year, but you can't take that into consideration in setting up your class.
How far behind did you say these are according to actual? I mean, are they 5 years out of date? Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, they probably are.
About 5 years out of date?
5 years behind. That's about the best you can do because they only do it about every 3 years, and the government gets around to printing them a year or two late. So 5 years is a good
year. And in the last 5 years, malpractice insurance has increased, 700%?
My only comment is nobody has found a way to improve that.
Question. That's a point I wanted to ask you. If we had a... Obviously, we've got to work on gross, but if we, because of the liability insurance that's affecting everybody in this room, is there any way that you can adjust a particular expense as long as you do it across the board? In other words, allow the liability insurance to be that you adjust.
You can't locally build in any kind of deduction from gross income. The only thing you can do would be to overall adjust rates. That's the only thing you have.
If the legislator was convinced that, you know, the doctors, because of the insurance crisis we're under, that they're paying 10 times as much.
They can lobby the legislature and get a change to authorize you to do that, sure.
But shouldn't we, if we get more up-to-date statistics, if I understand medical health is in crisis, if we have that, then in fact doctors should be netting less than they used to, which affects their ability to pay, and that should be reflected, I think, in fresher statistics.
That's why this system was devised, to allow you to do that. The problem is there is a built-in lag that nobody can do anything about.
We're working off of 87 numbers right now. So
yeah. 97 numbers.
That's the difference between going with the NAIC system, which was developed in 97, and those numbers are more up to date and will continue to be up to date. The SIC, which is currently what we're using, the latest change has been back in the well over 10 years ago, and so it's going to continue to lag behind as far as changing data. So if we went with the current rate system or the class system we have right now, doctors, engineers, accountants, all professionals are in class 7. Because the system and the ability to make a profit may have changed, let's say with doctors, well, they may have been in the new system, the NAIC, it's more than likely they will go down a class and therefore not have to pay as much per $1,000.
Yeah, but then somebody's going to pay more, and I'm not for that. I don't want to see that happen. The point is everybody's insurance rates have gone sky high, not just doctors. I mean, that's malpractice insurance alone. I mean, you talked the other night, one thing that really got me, you talked about the city having to pay higher insurance rates. Well, golly, we know that. We all pay higher insurance rates. My employee's insurance has risen 400% in the last four years. I mean, I just see that if we can't do anything locally, nothing can happen, I guess. I mean, I just think we need to take some leadership role here and see what we can do for business. And everybody's insurance rates are going skyrocketing out of the roof, and it's not just physicians, and I don't want it to be just physicians. It's like everybody that does business. If they want to have insurance for their employees, if they want to pay their workers' compensation, a person talked to me about that today, about how workers' comp is skyrocketed. I mean, everything is. And that's where I'm coming from, is when I see other things getting paid for and all this happening and we're not giving anybody any relief, it bothers me a lot.
Does anyone have any questions?
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to speak?
Well, one more.
How about, will you stay, hang around here and let this young lady speak? Okay, and then you're next.
I'm Beth Jackson with Jackson Transfer. And what category did you say transportation companies are in? The motor carriers and the transportation companies?
Yeah, Beth, speak a little bit closer. Get
the close. Transportation companies?
What classification are they
right,
in?
Right, what class? Okay. We're taxed on our gross revenue, and we do business all of South Carolina and interstate and international. So do we pay a city business license for everything that we do?
Yeah, where your principal place of business is, state law says that's where you pay the license.
Plus, if we have to pay for Public Service Commission, we're assessed a percentage on that.
That's a different tax.
We can't subtract that off of.
Is that in? You say that's in class 4, Lex? Okay, that wouldn't. Okay, I was thinking it wouldn't fit into class 8.
What all is under class 4?
What else is in class 4, Lex? You.
I don't have a book in front of me. I know often it's in class
Is this class four? Is it called sanitary services?
Right down. Sanitary services, curling, pollution, that security, commodities, brokers, all
class four. Okay. But question: when you move somebody to California, you're not required to buy a business license out there, right?
No.
When, with the same token, if somebody from Augusta moves somebody in, they're not required to buy a business license in Aiken, but they do pay on their total gross in Augusta? It depends on where they're at.
Well, if they're in Augusta and they move over within Aiken, do they have to buy a city business license in Aiken to move within the city?
I asked that question earlier, and I hear no, because of transportation. That seems a little unfair. Because
it's unfair. But the legislature has done it, and there's not much we can do about it.
It's a legislative
thing.
It's a rare exception.
It says that carriers may be taxed only at the principal place of business.
So if we were in the county, we could still do business within the city and be taxed double. But then...
No, you wouldn't be taxed at all. What he's saying is, now you talk about somebody that really is getting a...
In the county, we won't be taxed at all?
No. Public Service Commission exempts y'all.
Well, we pay a percentage. Now we're assessed a percentage of our gross for South Carolina and local and intra. So if we move two blocks, we don't pay anything?
We
still pay the
but it's because of the exemption that they've given. So that's when I asked a question about moving it, that you know you would be much better off being in the county because they don't charge anybody else to come in and move. So but the bad part about that is, I mean, it's just as far as your one business, this is the one business that we have that is unfair. It's clearly.
That's where you come into an exception, possibly? Category 8?
No, you can't put it in category.
That's what I was asking. Well, that's what I meant, what category we're in 4, or if we fell into Category 8.
No, you fall in Category 4.
Okay.
Based on the national statistics. But you can only tax if you have a place of business in the city.
So that gets incentive to move out of the city.
Would they be in the same category if they went to the next?
I'm not sure. I can find out.
But the same problem is going to exist, whether no matter what classification.
Well,
it might lower.
I mean, if we move to the county, we don't pay for a city business license, but we can do business within the city, just like Augusta does. And then we can do business within South Carolina. We can do business around the world. Mm-hmm. So.
I'm sorry, I didn't bring my copy.
Oh, that's okay.
I wanted to clarify.
Unless you move into a county that has there's several counties that have business licenses.
Well, I mean Aiken County.
But Aiken County does not. So, yes, if you move into Aiken County, you would not.
There's 6 counties.
So what were you saying about being charged double if you moved to Aiken County?
That's for every other business. There's a handful of businesses that you cannot do that, and yours is one of them.
Okay.
How much are you paying for a business license?
My dad does that. I mean, probably about $600.
Okay.
But see, that's what I'm saying. That's one question that he asked. You know, our total gross revenue is everything within the city, state, 48 states, around, you know, anything that we do under North American Van Lines, and that's total gross for the city business license. That he can't, you know, why isn't it just within the city? So.
Well, it doesn't sound fair at all, and but that's the way it is until we can get it changed.
I cleared it up.
But the Municipal Association, are they working to change this? They're not, are they?
In fact,
I read the last Municipal Association newsletter, and it was gleeful that we hadn't done anything to cut taxes.
I'm not aware that this is on the agenda, Jane, but I'll certainly bring it up.
Good.
Thanks.
Thank you, Beth. Anyone else? Yes, sir.
No, you go right here. I might pull you off.
My name is Mark Myler. I'm a geriatrician here in town, and I love the town. I love the services. I love the landscaping. So I'm not complaining really about the taxes, but I do have a concern. I think these regulations regarding business taxes were originally developed a long time ago, and they put people in arbitrary categories. For example, professional people, that was a small group of people 25 to 50 years ago, and they were the high income makers in those days. I think things have changed. I think what the one lady was talking about and the other lady, what's unfair is that you could have a plumber that makes or grosses $200,000 and one makes $20 million, and they're considered in a separate group from physicians who one may make $70,000 and one may make $7 million. They're put into these arbitrary groups. I think that's part of what's so disconcerting to people and seems so unfair. Our whole income tax system in this country, from my understanding, is based on progressive income. You charge higher rates to people who are making higher, whether they're a plumber, whether they're a baseball player, whatever they are. This system doesn't do that. It sets you up in an arbitrary category because you're a profession or some other business. And I think that's inherently goes against our whole system, which is part of the problem we were seeing here in this interplay. It's not whether you're professional or not. It should be on your income. I have no idea why they can't put a simple tax on your income. They see our tax form anyway for the gross amount. What would be the difference if they saw it for our actual income? That would, to me, seem to be more fair. It would get rid of all this business, whether you're a plumber or whether... It doesn't matter. Our system is not because you're a professional, you should be in one category, or it shouldn't be based on race, or it shouldn't be based on what profession you're in. It should be based on income. That would be fair. This is not fair. That's my only concern.
Just a question. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine if we said, we're going to do away with this business tax, but we're going to start a city income tax? We would be...
I didn't even necessarily say that. I want to say that this was based on it. It goes against our normal principles of government in this country.
I agree.
And I think it should be based in different... It shouldn't do away with the business tax. You could call it anything you want, but it should be based on your net, not your gross.
Well, I think you're right, and I think we all need to try it. To work on that through the legislature, if we get the people behind it and say, guys, let's try to do this.
But to me, that's the inherent wrong with this thing. It's not whether you're a physician, a judge, or a plumber.
Right.
My plumber's here tonight too. It should be based on your net income. Because I'm a physician, if I make $80,000, I shouldn't be charged at a higher rate than a plumber who makes $120,000. I don't think that's fair. That's my side.
Thank you, Mark. I agree with you. Roy, simple question. How do we go about changing this thing?
It depends on what you want to change.
to get it like the income tax.
If you want to adopt the latest version of it, then you will need to get the staff to work on reclassification of your businesses, do some calculations to see what rates you would need to set to keep your income level the same or whatever level you decide to set. And as we said, it'll take them a good 6 months to do that. Even with help, it'll take 6 months.
Okay. Let me ask you a question. You're working on it for Clemson, you said, right now, you and your partner. How long will it take you to do that if you were in Aiken doing that, let's say?
I would never promise less than 6 months.
Oh, okay.
Because 3,000 licenses have to be manually reclassified, regrouped. Calculations have to be done based on that.
Right.
It's a long, drawn-out process.
I have
grandchildren that I have to take care of.
So. Yeah. How many cities do you see going to the latest, the next?
Big part.
How many cities do you see? Do you see a number of them?
Gradually, they're all going to it because the IRS statistics are keyed to those now. They're not keyed to your SIC.
You know, well, that's what it sounds like to me. And all of our discussion is that's the thing we need to do.
You're going to get further and further behind if you stay with the
Absolutely.
SIC system.
Whether we do it this year, next year, or at least we plan on moving into that. It sounds like that's the way to go. That's the most up-to-date.
To give you an example of something that's been talked about here tonight, physicians are in Class 7 under your system. Under the next system, they immediately drop to Class 6 based on the later IRS statistics.
Well, as long as you've said many times, I think, as long as you've got a good basis for explaining things to citizens, and if the IRS does this, they give you the information, then, I mean, that's the best you've got, right? What short of what Dr. Mahler said, you know, going to the income tax process, which does sound fair to do it that way, which may never get done then.
Legislative.
Absolutely.
What you're looking for is the most equitable system you can find. There's no perfect system. Yeah. This system has flaws. All tax systems have flaws. This one has been accepted by the court as constitutional. In the last 30 years, nobody has come up with one that is more equitable. That's all I can tell you.
But doesn't it seem logical that we would go to the best system out there now, which is the new system?
I think we would.
Sooner or later, you're going to have to do
it. We're going to do it sooner or later, and if that's the right thing to do, then we ought to bite the bullet and proceed to get that done, seems to me.
But it seems to me that we might consider at the same time, once we've done this recategorizing of everyone, we have the 3,000 properly slotted, figure out what changes in our gross income, excuse me, I don't mean it that way, the city income. And then I would like to see us consider some way where the $1.5 million that we've got, which is really spread out over the 3,000 individual licenses, that perhaps at least we could cut that back somehow.
Yeah, we have the ability to do that now. We can do that now, and I think that's something
no
we need to look at.
Even after the recategorization, no one ends up having to pay more. That would be one of the goals of that.
You can do that, but you will definitely take a loss in general revenue if you choose to do that.
But if we do, that's something I think we've got to look out for the small business people here, and I think if it's got to be across the board, then so be it. But I think that we need to get the lower gross income businesses some relief on this.
But if... It's not necessarily, I mean, think about it. We've had some adjustments in property values, Mr. Mayor, but that's another story. But if we do cut it and the gross goes up, we make more money. So, I mean, that's what we're trying to do. Part of this is trying to say, how do we keep, I don't want Beth Jackson to move two blocks over. I want to keep them here. So by lowering it,
yes,
we may well increase it because you're going to do more business. That's what I want to see.
That's good politics as far as I'm concerned.
Me too. I mean, you'll fill up your empty buildings. For example, now we'll never have anybody. Why would you warehouse anything in the city of Aiken? You bring it in, you put it in a warehouse in the city, and then you sell it and you get to pay a business excise tax on the entire amount, right? If you never bring the stuff in the city in the first place, then you never have to pay it. I mean, that's just asking to have empty buildings.
And, you know,
doing it all the time.
As a compliment to Jane, which I sometimes have trouble doing, we would not be here had it not, and this is a complicated issue. Sometimes with complicated issues, you say, oh, my God, turn it over to staff or whatever. You really, really got to get involved in this. I mean, I pay it. I mean, I've got my companies pay it, but it is complicated, and you need to really get into these numbers. But I'm glad we're doing this. But under no circumstance are we looking trying to raise taxes on this deal. That was never the intent. What we're trying to do is be fair and see if there's some way that we can pass savings on to the business customers. And I think we can, but I mean we got a ways to go to make sure we got the numbers right.
Yes, Doctor?
Mr. Bates, I misunderstood what he said, but I thought he said after you go over a certain amount of profit, actually the rates come down. That also is anti-progressive in every way we've done. The more you make, then you can get a reduction as you go up to a certain point. And I think that is crazy. I mean, maybe that's where you could save some money. In other words, if you go over a certain amount of income, mm-hmm. then the rates actually go down. Is that true?
Of yeah. growth.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Of growth.
Yes.
That is absolutely crazy.
Well, that's something that the council does have control
over. We do?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You basically have control over what rate base you'd want to have, what rate per thousand. The system we have right now, there's a 15-cent difference per classification for every thousand. So it'd be taking, let me go over to the board.
The current rate system we have, if we want to look at the classes and the dollars we make down here, and this is your class, or your lower class is here, and you keep going up. Since we're on a line like this right now, because there's a 15 cents difference per class. If you look on the sheet, other cities only have a nickel per class. And so they have squeezed this down, and so there actually is very little difference in here. You can do whatever you want. You can have a large difference between class. You can change the base per class. The thing that we as staff need from you.
Number one, we would recommend that you go ahead and change the system. You know, if you're going to do anything, we need to go to the new system so that every few years as IRS makes a change, we're going to be able to keep up with that, with classifications. And as was stated, there's a lot of complications going on right now with the medical practice. And I say that not because of where your husband's at, but there's a lot of changes, and that's why, as a professional, they have went from Class 7 down to Class 6. Inversely, there's a lot of change with retail, especially with big box retail, and the profits they're now able to make. Those particular entities would go up in classes. So maybe they're right now at a Class 2 or 3, and they may go up to a 3 or 4. So what we would need is, number one, if you want to go to a new system, we'll start preparing for the new system. It'll take us several months. We feel, though, and I've talked to Elle, I've talked to Lex, I've talked to Anita, we feel it's worth it to go to the new system. The next thing we'd need to know from you is, and I believe Pat said it, and I could be wrong, because I've heard a lot tonight, is if somebody gets lower, that's fine, but you don't want anybody to go higher. So let's just take and I'm not saying this is what happened, but let's say Walmart was going to go up 10% as an example. If we went with the new system, what I think I heard you say is we wouldn't let them go up 10%. They would stay at the current rate they're at, that they're paying. So in other words, if that was the case, if we're collecting $1.5 million from those 3,000 business licenses, because some would be going down, next year we might only collect $1.4
million. What I want to make sure is that the system is fair. And I think what we're trying to do is make sure the system is fair and that if there are adjustments that are supposed to be done, I'm not prepared to say that right now, that we need to be careful on that, because think about it. I mean, if we've got people that have it at its adjusted and the percentages of the net income that particular industries are making are higher now than it was back in 1997, then we need to make sure that we've got the best information. So, no, I'm not prepared to say that nobody is going. Now, what I am prepared to say is that if we can get savings in the general fund and the general budget, that we try to pass it along to the business owners. That's what I'm saying. But you may have some, to be fair, that may go up. I don't know. I really don't, Roger. I do know this, that it's not fair to certain segments, that if their expense ratios have gone out of whack over the last 10 years, that they be treated. I mean, they've got to be adjusted. But I mean, Mr. Mayor, we got to really be careful about this. I think there are some savings in that general fund, but I don't know how much.
Well, I think that if we're going to leave this room thinking that everyone is going to either remain the same or go down, we're not facing reality. Somebody is going to go up. That's the bottom line.
Absolutely.
That's assuming some go down.
That's reality.
Yeah.
unless we find cuts in the general fund.
Well, one of the proposals I had made to you also was, if you want to reduce the amount of business license, you know, let's say your goal is 10 years from now to reduce that 1.5 million down to 500,000. Let's do that incrementally. If you say that's the goal you want to see with staff, then we will go ahead and look for ways to cut other expenses out of the budget, and over the next series of years try to do that. You know, you would have to look at certain expenses we now have. Do we want to consider, and I'm not saying, again, we're going to get rid of it, but a number of years ago we didn't have neighborhood services. You know, we're working with these neighborhoods. Well, we can cut that out. Or we could look at reducing the amount of times we mow certain areas or trim trees or somehow look at ways that we could reduce expenses. But again, we'd have to look at that line item by line item and go over it and see which areas that you would want to go ahead and cut some of those expenses. And sure, we could go ahead and look at that.
Roger, let me just say, just as we are, or we're talking about giving some relief to our business owners, especially our small business folks, we've got to think creatively, too, in terms of looking at ways that we can generate revenue. And I think there are ways out there, and what that will take, I don't know. But
well, as I told you once earlier on the budget cycle, one of the things that got brought up was garbage. Our garbage is right now a little over $3 per month, less than what it's costing us to do that. I mean, that's something council has to look at. Do you want to charge the full rate for these services or give a reduction in the rate and say taxes and stuff are going to pay for it? But again, there's choices that can be made. And that's what it comes down to, is what's the choices.
And I think Pat said it well over the years in terms of there are no free lunches. You've got to make some sacrifices if you're going to do these things. And it depends on where it is.
Well, the choices and consequences of your choices.
And reduction in services is not always where we need to make the cuts. There's other stuff.
Right. Okay, do we have a path forward here then? It sounds like we've
got several others.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, I just have one question. I heard that the categories go in 15-cent increments per different category. And I understand that we set that category rate.
Right, we did.
So that if we wanted to make it 1-cent increments, we could do that.
Certainly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can lower it.
That would mean the higher classes would pay less, the lower classes would pay more. Is basically how that would work.
Right. We're going to study the whole shooting match.
Yeah. John, did you have something?
And then Ms. Bradley.
She's still deciding whether she. You're ready. Okay.
She's cooled off now. Insurance. Did I understand you that insurance companies or agents that come from Columbia or other areas that come into Aiken to sell insurance to businesses, they don't pay the city of Aiken any insurance, any money?
Or they are supposed to pay based on the commissions they earn from sales of policies that insure risk located in the city of Aiken.
On commissions that they earn, not on their gross.
The insurance company pays on the gross.
Okay, and they pay to the city.
2% at $20 a thousand.
Okay, and is this being kept up with?
Yes, the Municipal Association does that.
Okay.
But if they're in Columbia and they're paying on all of it at Columbia, then they get to take that part off and they would pay us.
No, the Municipal Association has a way of determining
We collect around $2 million a year from insurance premium business license.
Okay, on contractors in my category, which I think is a class 5.
It's class 8.
Class 8. How can it be controlled through Lex's office that we're looking at giving business people in the city a break? And what I'm hearing today or tonight is that people are wanting to leave the city because of these licenses. Well, if we make it somehow equal for contractors that are outside the county to pay, you're charging them double now on their gross receipts the best of your ability to know what those gross receipts are. Maybe that needs to be tripled or quadrupled. And I am looking at going out of the city as soon as I build my building, I will be in the county. So I'm not saying this to help me by any means. But this is a way that people coming into the city, it would keep city business people want to stay in here more in my category and feel like they're paying a fair share versus somebody coming across the river from another small town and not paying as much. Even though it's double, if they only come and do $1,000 worth of job, $1,000 job, and they pay the base would be $50 in my category versus $320,000, and they pay $50 and then 50 cents on every thousand.
Yeah, see, it's a lot easier because you have to have we inspect construction and you gotta, you know, you have to do that. But the physician sitting there, I mean, he doesn't, and poor Beth Jackson, I mean, she's really cutting the limit. But the physician being just inside the city, just outside the city, I mean, you know, there's a distinct disadvantage for those people that. So that's one of the things we're trying to look at, is trying to see where we want to try to do something that's fair for our people that are inside and paying the taxes, and it is a tax, and it's fair, but we want to try to be. That's why we're having all this discussion.
Well, in the construction industry, I think that if it was monitored, and it might be monitored very well, I'm not sure, I've never seen your system, but I am out on the road, and I do see all the handymen that aren't paying, handy persons that aren't paying their fair share. So I think there's a lot of revenue that could come to the city in that way, from people that aren't licensed or their business isn't established in the city of Aiken.
John, if you move out of the city with your business, well, you would. When would you ever want to come into the city? Would you?
Oh yes. I mean, the city is probably, and I'd be able to answer your question by the end of next year when the computer system is finished. Exactly what the percentage is, because when I do move out, I'll be able to go to Lex and say, here's the addresses, here's the exact amount of money that they've paid me.
Mm-hmm.
The businesses that I do in the city of Aiken are 90+ percent.
Mm-hmm. So if we wanted to annex that area where your new building's going to be, you would not be opposed?
Oh, yes, I'm highly opposed to that.
That's what I thought.
I'm not opposed to paying the business.
I know.
Business. I'm opposed to some of the other things as signing on a plat that the city of Aiken can annex me anytime if I take city water. There's other issues there. It has nothing to do with the business license.
In fact, if you move outside the city, your probably business license is going to go up. Right,
oh, it's going to go up a lot.
No question.
And that's my whole thing, is that these other contractors, and they're not going to be a help for the physicians in this area in that same situation. For Dr. Myler, or for you, or for Hulford, or one of these other physicians. But in my category, what percentage out of the 3,000 business licenses are contractors? And what percentage are those based outside the city of Aiken?
I would have to pull those figures.
It's an interesting set of figures.
We know that over half of our business licenses are outside the city.
Over half of them are outside
the
city of Aiken.
Yeah, that's what was stated earlier. So of the 3,000, over 1,500 are outside the city.
And they're paying double the...
And they're paying double
the rate. So we're
they're paying
under.
Double the rate on their business inside the city.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's not their gross income. And you have to take them at face value what they say they're doing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, you don't take me at face value. You make me bring down my income.
But again, you understand with a subcontractor, contractor, they're getting building permits. It's pretty easy to find out exactly or fairly close what they're making and doing inside the city of Aiken. If you all of a sudden are working on the dormitories over at USC Aiken, we know exactly what your costs are going to be, and we can go ahead and charge your business license based on that gross amount and then double it.
So many of the outside city businesses will get a one-time job license where they're reporting their total receipts up front, you know, like the dormitories, like you said, where you already pay with the contract amounts. So those, it's pretty easy.
For those big jobs,
right.
And new construction,
sure.
Is easy. For the type of work I do, the repair work that I do, it I don't see. Yes, Chief Busby does come by and see me from time to time. He checks on me and says, "Hey, John, how you doing?" So, yes, there are neighborhoods that get policed more than others. There's a lot of work goes on in construction that they are not paying city business license. And that's another way. And I'm not sure what the easiest way to police that is, but that is a place for more revenue for the city.
I have a question in relationship to that, if you could, Lex. I knew that Mr. Garcia had asked you for a list of people in his category and what kind of business license they paid, and you wrote him back and you said that you couldn't possibly give him that information because it was private. It would show what their gross income was.
Right.
Well, we are all required to post that piece of paper with our gross income on it in public. So how can that be required? And then you can't give him that kind of information to see whether, you know, I mean, maybe that would be a way. It seems to me like that's a complete contradiction in terms.
By state law, I cannot give that information.
But you could, by state law, you can require the business owner to post their gross receipts. I mean, your business license tax is posted.
You can certainly work out that.
No.
Yes, it is.
Not mine.
Okay, but downtown it is. Well, I walk into businesses downtown, there it is.
Yeah, but if you don't have to post it, it's not posted.
It says, yes, we do.
You can easily
block
out that
paper. It doesn't say that. You should tell people that. They get irritated by stuff like that.
But old license, you can just tear it off the side, you know. Yeah. It was perforated, but...
Okay. Thank you, John. Thank you, John.
Ms. Bradley.
Ms. Bradley.
Just a couple of things I want to ask. One is, does Aiken still have the fee that if you do a lesser amount of work that you don't have? There used to be a license years ago that up to $15,000 or $17.50 or whatever, you didn't have to be licensed by the state. You only had a municipality license.
I don't know.
We're picking on plumbers here, so
I don't know.
I'll pick a little bit.
I think that now, if you do, I'm not positive, but I'm pretty sure that if you do business in the city of Aiken, plumbing business, even there and there,
right,
or a business, then you have to have a state labor license. Whereas before, that was, you could, now homeowners, you can do specialty business license, which is up to $5,000.
Okay.
$255,000.
Well, for instance, every 2 years I have to buy a state mechanical license from the state of South Carolina. It cost me $350. Then every town or city that we go in to do a job, we go get a permit and we pay so much per fixture that's installed if it's plumbing. If sewer, water, most of our contracts are 5 feet outside of a building. If we do heating and air, we pay so much per ton of every air conditioner we install. Ms. Waters wants to bring up how, I guess the medical profession is struggling. Plumbers are too.
Everybody, that's my point.
$7 million we grossed. I assure you my last line was a lot less than Dr. Brantham at $700,000. I have 86 families that my business mm-hmm. is supporting.
Right.
I have $176,000 was paid this year on insurance premiums.
That's right.
I am still providing health care insurance.
I am too.
When I go home, all I have is my salary.
Mm-hmm.
So all I'm saying is we're all struggling, but we're all benefiting from the benefits that the city gives us as well. So don't forget
the city doesn't give us anything.
Well,
I mean, come on.
You may not think
we're
so,
paying
but
for
if you
it.
Had to pay for everything they give you, you would say a different story.
Okay. Hey.
Okay.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. It's back to us. Have we decided what we want to do? We want to move as soon as possible into the NACS. At the same time, we want to be looking at our budget to see or have the staff look at the budget to see, give us a list, let's say, of possibilities.
And looking at the cost.
Of cuts.
The beginning amount
savings.
We charge. What is
yes.
The,
yeah. And at the same time, we move into the NACs, we can look at the rates,
right.
The difference.
Mr. Mayor.
Starting.
I just want to make a comment. I've been listening to everything tonight, and I don't have a problem going with the new system. I'll be glad to assist you that, but I just want to comment on Ms. Bradley. You know, I've known Ms. Bradley all my life, too, and I bought a business license for 27 years. And, in fact, my business was right beside Ms. Bradley for 18 years, and I had a chance to move out of the city 9 years ago, and I looked long and hard at moving outside the city. There was trees and a lot of things made me want to move out of the city. But like Ms. Bradley says, when I went back and considered the fire service, the police protection, the water and sewer rates, the lower insurance rates, and everything that the city offered us, I just thought I'd be crazy and move outside the city. So, yes, we do pay for these services, but like Ms. Bradley said, the city does give us something for our money, and I just want to make that. So I'm not against the business licenses. I think it is the most fair tax we pay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good. Very good. Anything else? Roy Bates, thanks again for being with us.
Are you driving back tonight?
You're a real warrior here.
Beat this one, Bates.
I wish you'd get a soft cushion for this.
Mr. Bates, I do want to say at the beginning of the evening you said no tax system is perfect.
I just told you.
I would like to say no tax is even better.
Wait a minute.
Before y'all leave,
as city manager wants to make sure he understands.
Make sure I understand the direction you want us to go in. I understand you want us to go with the North American classification system. But explain again about the changing the rates between or the minimum rate or what do you want us to do?
We can look at that as we review.
First thing you do is reclassify. Then compute what your income would be based on those so that we know what we're talking about.
Okay.
And then from there we figure out what, if any, cuts we can make and where they would come from.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So we'll stay with the same rate system right now that we have currently when making the initial run of the new system.
Yes.
And then we'll bring that back to you, and you want to see all 3,000 businesses where they're at before and after? It's 62 pages long. Or what would you like to have us come back to you with?
Well, like at least maybe by category? Is that... By group?
I mean, you want a sampling of maybe here's 20 businesses, here's a typical retail of what they were doing before and after, here's a typical business professional what they were before, a bank before and after, or
I'm not sure we're qualified to say. I think we'd have to get some suggestions, mm-hmm. some expertise from Roy if he's available or someone. This is where the staff work, that we're talking about a six-month staff work comes in.
You're going to need at least a sample business income level for each next sector, or you're not going to know who's going up or down. Mm-hmm.
Well, can't we have a rate? I mean, won't we know that the rate's going to be different, that this is going to go into...
The rate's not going to tell you the total difference because there will be changes because of the classification in the next system. There will be shifts there, then there will be shifts because of the IRS statistic changes. You have two factors working on the shifts.
I don't think we can do anything until we have that information that we're going to... And then what we'll do is when we see how it affects, then we can adjust what we can do on the percentages as we go.
Well, we'll take all the businesses that we have right now, throw them into the new system,
exactly.
and that will then produce a certain amount of revenue that we get in. Again, we're comparing, because the insurance is not in this, the telecommunications is not in this, the water and sewer is not in this, the cable is not in this. It's just those 3,000 businesses. We could then let you know, well, instead of getting $1.5 million based on the new system, we're getting $1.6 million. We might say we're getting $1.4 million, and then you could let us know where you want to go from there. Is that okay?
Yes.
Sounds
okay.
Good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We stand adjourned.
Model ordinance. for.
We have to vote on that.
Right.
Yeah.
Talk to you.
What is it?